For you people, it is a Starship Rokon show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
National Weather Service just sent out a tweet. It's 90 degrees today, and that's ridiculous, so let's talk about snow. And they have a bunch of fun facts about snow to remind us that it's not that far away.
Oh, for God's sake.
I do like this little blast of hot weather. I mean, this is just...
Really?
Yes, I do. It's like last. It's the last blast of summer, you know, and it's a little gift at the end of September.
I don't like it. I live for it. This,
oh, I
don't know.
I thought you would hate this because it's too hot.
No, it's not.
It's a little too hot.
It is a little
sweaty.
Steamy. It's a little sweaty. I'm parched. There is, this is a beautiful moment right here. I am pretending fully and completely on this, the first full week of fall.
Yep.
That it's still the middle of summer.
Mm-hmm.
I have deluded myself, and now you've just heard none other, no less than Tom Skilling, meteorologist of all meteorologists. There's never been a more successful or specifically perfectly forecasted television meteorologist than Tom Skilling.
Esteemed. And respected, I would say, and just the go-to guy in America, I would say.
You know what I'm saying? And next week he says it's going to be back in the 80s. Okay. Listen. I paid for my global warming. I want it.
I mean, you paid for it.
I paid for it. Whatever.
More
with my CO2 emissions.
Right. You're doing a lot of that.
With my coal. Mm-hmm. My investment in coal fired plants.
Okay.
And I want to bring coal back because I know it's like the energy of the future.
Still a big part of Illinois' energy right now.
That's what Donald Trump wants to bring it back. It's good. We're going to bring back those good jobs. If people dying in coal mines, it'd be great.
I think they've got 10 new jobs this year.
No. There's hundreds now. Now that's like, I think 180.
Sure?
Yeah.
Oh, 180. Jobs. Okay.
Yeah.
It's hard to dress for this weather, though. Do you wear something where you're going to be comfortable outside, but then the air conditioning is blasting in the buildings?
But isn't that always the problem in the summer?
That is.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
And I wore the white pants today, and I know that's, I don't know. I know,
Labor Day,
horrifying
no.
to some people.
You better be wary of the fashion police. They are out.
Well, I was actually more worried because I took a trip to the dentist with my daughter, and I got blood on them today. So
God.
Yuck. It's okay. It's fine to get blood on white pants.
It was like blood and like a little chocolate shake that we had after, and it was the wrong day to wear white pants connected to the
time out. I got to take a time out.
You don't like blood?
Well, first of
not
all...
Not on white pants.
Yeah. But I gotta stop because we just glossed over something important. Violetta just said it's okay to get blood on white pants. Hold on. Is that some sort of former Yugoslavian thing? What is that?
It's the perfect thing to get blood on because you can bleach them and not affect the pants because they're white.
But I was bleach your white pants and then they get threadbare and then they get holes in them.
Yeah, and the stain stays in. You've got to take
it out
immediately.
It kind of does.
You got to take it out immediately with some of that.
I just like getting white things dirty because I know I can bleach them.
Yeah. No, I use the OxyContin or whatever they call that.
It's not OxyContin.
I think that's something else.
It's harder to come by than the other.
Not really.
Oh, OxyClean.
OxyClean. Yes, I use
that.
I use the OxyClean. I do my own laundry because I'm that kind of guy. Except when the lady comes over to do it.
Oh, gosh.
All right, you could use hydrogen peroxide, by the way. It's $1 a bottle.
She does, and she's, once a week she does my laundry. But when I'm not, when...
You do
when,
the delicates?
When the lady doesn't arrive to do my laundry, I do it myself, and I've started...
Wait a second. You don't call your mom?
I don't call my mom, no.
You do it yourself?
No.
I'm impressed.
Well, I do it myself, or I have, the cleaning lady comes over and does it.
Right, I'm saying when she's not there and you're forced to do your own, you don't call someone else.
Oh, no, I do everything around my house.
See, what I would love,
I clean when she's not there. I cook for myself. I do my own laundry.
Oh, my gosh,
I'm totally capable of
this. Do you want a medal for that?
I do. Well, don't you think? I mean, come on.
Millennial.
Let me ask you a question.
Strong.
It is Rose Strong. And let me just ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
How many... I mean, Kevin, we can't talk to right now because of a technical issue. We'll get to him in just a few minutes.
Well, we know Kevin's ma does his laundry, so we don't have to weigh in with Kevin.
Kevin, are you there? Can we hear you, actually? Okay, he's not there. Selector.
Ma!
Remote. Hold on.
Get Kevin on the phone.
I don't know. Just tell me where he is. What remote is he on? I'll find it. Yeah. No, what's the...
Where's
laundry is pretty intense.
The point here is this, that laundry is... That doing your own laundry. I mean, come on. How many guys? I want to just ask you a question here in your lives. How many guys cook for themselves and do their own laundry and do all that stuff? and pay the bills and do everything around the house. How many?
That's a good point.
Are there people in your life, Anna, that are doing that? Guys are doing that?
No.
All right.
I would say no. I do.
Judy, have there been guys in your life to do all that?
My sons do their own laundry and have for years.
For now.
That's one of my rules.
Until they get married.
Yeah, because you don't.
Now, I do cook because I enjoy doing the cooking in for them. The cooking in. But yeah, they cook for themselves. Or maybe they just go to Portillo's. I'm not really sure.
See, right?
But they do their own laundry.
I mean, I'm cooking tonight. I got a whole plan for when I get home, what I'm going to do, what I'm going to cook.
Wait, do you have a chef that helps
you? No. The only time I ever have a chef is if I'm hosting your birthday party. It's the only time I've ever hired a chef to do anything.
I'm going to tell you, I am still impressed.
Yeah.
I'd love to see it when your person is late to do your laundry. On the days when she comes to do your laundry, I would like to see how you act at those moments.
Are you waiting at the door?
No. I do.
I think he's losing it Lawrence O'Donnell style is what I think.
I'm just telling you, I have time. No, I will sometimes start it for her so that there's less for her to do.
Oh, wow.
Nice. So that it's the time, it times out because she's got X amount of time.
Let me ask you, do you make your bed every day?
I do, yeah.
I don't understand people that can leave the house without making their bed.
I make the bed.
It gives me anxiety.
I just don't know what's going to happen later. And I don't want people when the investigators arrive in the house to to search for stuff. I want it to be nice and clean and orderly.
Clean underwear, clean bed. Yeah, get it? Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. All right, right now, Violetta's got the WGN traffic trouble spots.
And I'm impressed by your laundry doing.
Thank you.
OxyContin
is what
OxyClean.
Oh, whatever.
Play ball, celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com. Check it out today.
Hi, it's the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantzis right here on 720 WGN. Ben Bradley joins us from the WGN TV newsroom where he's preparing himself for the 4 o'clock, the 5 o'clock, the 6 o'clock, the 9 o'clock, the 10 o'clock, the 11 o'clock, the midnight, the 2:30 in the morning, and then the 4 o'clock.
He doesn't sleep, this poor Ben Bradley. Yeah.
But does he do his own laundry?
Do you do your own laundry?
I do, and I clean.
Really?
My wife could not tell you where our washer and dryer is located in our house.
Ooh, interesting.
That sounds like a dream come true.
Now, what?
That's the only way she would say it's a dream come true.
Yeah. No wonder she married you.
Yeah.
The only reason I do my own laundry, and Ben knows this, the only reason I do my own laundry is no woman wants to be around me long enough to actually do it. So that's how that goes.
They would get through the wash cycle and the relationship would be over.
Yeah. It's over.
Sorry.
It's
like, move.
Can we stay together long enough for it to dry?
Yeah, no, it doesn't work out like that.
Yeah.
That's great you do laundry.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm a renaissance man, you know?
You have kids. That's a lot of a lot of extra laundry.
Do you like the OxyClean or OxyContin? Which do you prefer?
OxyContin, and then I do the OxyClean, and it all works out.
I do prefer that over the bleach because I prefer the OxyClean over the bleach.
No, you can't mess with the bleach. Can't mess with the
really.
Bleach.
No,
I have done bleach.
You always splash it. You always accidentally.
Well, you got to pour it. You got to get the stuff that's viscous, and you got to pour it into the appropriate hole in your machine, and then you, right? I mean, you do. It's
you don't want to put it in the wrong hole.
No, you got to. No,
that would burn.
There's a hole specifically for it. It says right there on it, bleach.
And sometimes it's hard to see because it's written in the same color in plastic, right? So you got the fabric softener part, you got the bleach part.
But I look for the smaller word. Pre-wash. I look for the small, and it's generally a smaller hole, and I pour the bleach right in there.
You can do those safe bleaches, but you're right. It's just not worth
it. Someone tell me when we're back on the air, okay?
Just saying that you've got
to be prepared to talk about.
What? I'm just saying that that's what you got to do. You got to be very careful about that. But then, make sure you hit the bleach cycle in your washing machine.
You're supposed to use the bleach before you put it in the wash, so you soak it a little bit,
sometimes,
scrub the specific spot.
Now you have to right. I mean, but you got to be careful because if you pour it directly on a specific spot, Anna is right. You will create a hole.
I know.
The world is coming to an end. I mean, we got North Korea threatening to bomb us. The president's more interested in the NFL protest. But we've decided to really lower the bar and talk about proper use of bleach in your laundry.
It helps distract us.
And oddly, this probably makes all of the listeners feel so much better.
Safer.
Something
we can all agree on.
Me too.
Too much bleach is a bad thing. Plus, when you open up the bleach, it smells funky, right? And you're like, uh-oh.
But then it's clean. You're like, wow, the burn.
Yeah, but according to Orange is the New Black, that is a way you can get high.
Yes,
I did not know
that's
that.
That's true.
And I get all of my information from Netflix.
Yeah, you don't need OxyContin anymore. Just the.
So I don't use that trying to get the.
You don't need it
because I get on my golf shorts. I get like lighter ones. I get like that black stuff on the pocket, and I don't know what that's from. I still can't figure it out. They said it's from the steering wheel of a cart. I don't know what it is.
And it doesn't come off.
It doesn't come off, so I have to use the OxyClean for that. And sometimes it comes off, and sometimes it doesn't. If you use the bleach, then it's like it doesn't work.
Tide bleach pen is also a go-to for me.
Is this what you talk about on a first date, usually? Do you get her technique?
Now, how are you with the laundry?
Clean? Yeah.
That's what I'm gonna,
women love that.
I'm going to try that. Yeah, I'm going to see how that works.
Right. Do you cook? I'm really hungry.
No, I'm thinking,
how are you around the house?
I'm thinking more of a woman's role is in the kitchen and in the laundry room. I have a laundry room. It's a nice one if you'd like to use it.
You'd really like it.
Yeah, you'd really like it.
I'll let you redecorate.
I actually had the ironing board mounted.
I have the fancy washer dryer. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of different. It's like a totally digital. You're gonna like
energy
it.
Energy efficient. It's that HE. You got to look for that special logo on there.
Yeah.
So and it's got its own bleach hole.
So yeah, exactly. It's got the little bleach holes. You can tell the difference between the bleach hole and the other hole.
Yeah.
So that's a very important thing. So you want to come home with me or not?
You know, yeah, that's not very successful.
Because I'm not ordering dessert if you don't want to come home with me right now. I'm going to tell you right now.
Having spent a considerable amount of time discussing your love life with you over the years, Ro, this conversation isn't too far afoot from what actually happens on a first date.
Did you see Uber got in trouble for that in India because they said it was Wife Appreciation Day and, like, do your wife a favor and give her a day off from the kitchen? And they actually put that out there. I thought, oh, my gosh.
Well, given their corporate culture, I guess it's not too surprising.
Yeah, kind of doesn't surprise you, I guess. It shouldn't, but it does at the same time.
All right. What's on the WGN TV news at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10?
It's already time to wrap up.
Speaking of Renaissance women, Aaron Ivory has a fun story about a 60-year-old woman who apparently had made quite the name for herself. Man, 60-year-old man. Aaron is breakdancing right now behind me. Made quite a name for herself on the breakdancing circuit a few decades ago, and now she goes back to Chicago.
What?
He goes back to Chicago Public Schools and teaches the finer forms of old school breakdancing.
Was he spinning on his head on a slab of linoleum on Rush Street back in the 80s?
Yes.
Do I know him?
Folding it up and moving it to the next corner.
And moving it to the next.
Came to harass
exactly.
Him. Yeah, exactly.
To move along, sir.
Yep. Plus, we got Cubs coverage from St. Louis to Wrigleyville. Will tonight be the night? And, of course, we are talking about North Korea, mm-hmm. Puerto Rico, and the other big stories of the day.
All right.
While you guys discuss laundry.
No, we're moving on. We have important things to discuss here as well. Congressman Kinzinger is going to be with us. You might, you're familiar with him, too, Ben.
Give him my best and definitely ask him about his laundry techniques.
I will see what I can do about that because he's single, right?
He must do his own laundry.
He's like famously single. He's like Charlie Wilson's War, that guy. I'd like to know who does his laundry.
I feel like he just throws a shirt out when it's dirty.
There's a lot of pictures of him on the internet without a shirt on. So
worked out well for Aaron Schock.
Yeah, no, different reasons. Sometimes you see him with a picture on the internet with his shirt off and a bandolier around his, it's kind of a Rambo sort of feeling.
Yeah.
We just see him.
That's when he's been on guard duty for the weekend.
Yeah, it's weird. All right, we'll ask about that. Thanks,
Ben.
Thanks for stopping by. Here comes Judy Pilak, WGN News, 2 minutes away. Music can mean only one thing.
Absolutely true. One of our favorite people.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger, congressman from the Illinois District of Rowanana.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
That's the most important part of his title, mm-hmm. at least.
Exactly. I know he does other media. He's always on Wolf Blitzer. Sometimes he's the official congressman of Wolf Blitzer. I don't know why that is.
Sometimes he's in the building at the CNN wolf. Office doing the Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah, can I ask you a question? Does Wolf Blitzer smell pretty? I've always wondered that when you look at him. He's so well coiffed, you know, everything is like in place, and you wonder if he smells like he's just like from a makeup counter. Does he?
He's magical. He's actually, truthfully, he's one of the nicest guys you'll meet. He, mm-hmm. you know, I'll have like interns go over with me sometimes, and he takes a lot of attention talking to them, asking them where they went to school and everything.
Nice.
And, yeah, he's nice. Take pictures.
Every time I try to talk to him, he just walks, he turns on his heel and walks away from me. I don't know, what is that about?
Well, that's because you don't talk to interns, and he knows that, and it hurts his feelings.
And it also might be that he realizes that I do my own laundry. We were talking about that earlier. We want to know, do you do your own laundry? Because you're a single guy, and, you know, always on the make. What, do you do your own laundry?
Yeah, I do. I do my own laundry, but I have to admit, and this drives people nuts, I don't separate whites and colors, mm-hmm. so I just wash it all in cold.
I think that's very progressive of you, by the way.
I think that too.
I'd like to see the president do that. Hey, let me ask you a question here. North Korea, I want to play something for you here. Here is Donald Trump from just a few hours ago when he was meeting with the Spanish president. That is not coming through. I don't know what's happening.
Good one.
Not a preferred option. But if we take that option, it will be devastating. I can tell you that, devastating for North Korea. That's called the military option. If we have to take it, we will.
All right. It will be devastating for North Korea. He also earlier, over the weekend, he tweeted that they're not going to be around much longer, referring to the management of North Korea, I think, is the best way to put that. Is the rhetoric getting too hot?
I actually don't think so. And I'm going to tell you why. So there was an article, and I forget what it was in, that came out today, which said the North Koreans are desperately trying to reach out to Republican consultants to find out what Donald Trump is made of, what's he thinking. And I think the sense of unpredictability, we've tried the same way in North Korea for years, and it hasn't worked. It's led to basically an ICBM missile that's everything short of a reentry. And so I think, you know, putting a sense of unpredictability out there of, hey, he may very well use the military option. Kim Jong-un's smart, I think, and he knows that if the military option's used, yeah, he can take a lot of people out with him, but he will die and his regime will be over. And so I think showing that sense of unpredictability, coupling that with stifling economic sanctions, as well as, you know, all these other things we're doing, bringing allies in, et cetera, is the best way that we can lead to either a negotiated solution or something with teeth without having to go to military. But I think, you know, you hear people out there on TV, oh, there's no military option, nothing's on the table. And the truth is, when you say that, you make diplomacy less effective. And so I actually, to be honest with you, I'm not a fan of, you know, Twitter with foreign policy. But in this case, I think that having that sense of unpredictability could actually work to our benefit.
Congressman, what do you make of the words from the other side, the North Koreans, who say that the president's comments are a declaration of war, but also said that they'd shoot down American aircraft, even ones not in their airspace, is the threat we heard from them. What do you make of that rhetoric?
That doesn't worry me because, you know, there's, I don't want to get into too much because I don't know what I can and can't say.
Well, I think Reuters had a report about their aging air defense systems, that they're not really up to the task, potentially.
Well, they're not up to potential. The sanctions even hurt those more. They can't get parts to repair them. Their military is big, but it's literally Korean War vintage stuff, which obviously we have the ability to defeat now. And that includes the fact that in many cases we're flying these missions and they don't even know we're doing it. So, you know, I don't worry about those threats. This is more North Korea. At the same time, people have a right to be concerned about where this is going. But I just want to say, you know, this is different than when Pakistan and India got nuclear weapons because they nuclearized, which was bad, but they didn't do it continually threatening to wipe the United States off the map, threatening to wipe Japan off the map. North Korea said they're going to sink Japan and then shoot two missiles over Japan. At some point, you have to take the rhetoric seriously, especially when they get the technology to deliver. And so I think using every trick in our book, rallying allies, frightening enemies, having a military option, is the last best hope to actually prevent a military option in this case.
All right. You're a congressman, you're in the Air Force, you enjoy watching the sports. Mm-hmm. I have to ask you about this.
The sports.
The sports. Do you think that the president weighing in on the NBA and NFL, but NFL specifically here in terms of the protests, is helpful, hurtful? Where do you stand on this?
Well, in terms of the president weighing in, I think things like this, I've always said a president should punch across or up and never down. I think he never should have involved himself in this. I think he's made this a very big issue. At the same time, though, I am personally offended, extremely offended by people that take a knee. Look, when I was on active duty last week with the military, I am actually out there fighting for people's First Amendment rights. Everybody has a First Amendment right. Nobody's arguing against that. But when I'm on active duty, I'm not allowed to go on your show and express a political opinion because there are rules that surround my behavior when I'm on active duty. There's right. rules that surround the behavior of a journalist working for a news agency. There's rules in the NFL. You can't wear a hat with a name brand on it and those kinds of things. So I think when you have people, you know, folks like Colin Kaepernick and other NFL players have a huge forum on Twitter or going on shows and making their points known, and they should have every right to do that, as we agree. But I think when you take a knee to the national anthem you can say that you're just making a point, but there's a lot of people that see that point as disrespectful to the flag and to the anthem and to the country that has enabled them to be very successful, and that, frankly, is the envy of the rest of the world. So, you know, look, I don't think the president should have gotten involved. At the same time, though, I am highly offended when I see people take a knee to our anthem. It just really makes me sick.
But isn't it, I mean, ultimately, the respect of the nation, I mean, the individual, you'd feel however you want about the individual, whether they're right or they're wrong, right, which you're expressing now. But, I mean, isn't that the beauty of the United States of America, is that we can do that? That military consequence, without judicial consequence, without, you know, with and even without work. I mean, the funny thing about the work issue is that, you know, people go, well, you know, if I did that in my workplace, well, they don't play the national anthem in your workplace. You know, I mean, it's a very specific circumstance that these players are in when they express themselves. And this is a new phenomenon, right? I mean, except for 1968, it started with you know, the 1968 Olympics. But it seems to me that the beauty of this, and the people who are like, and then when the president says, you must make this, you must fire them for that. It seems anathema. And I get it, because it's a business. They can do what they want, but they're going to have to fire entire teams. And you know they're not going to do that. And sure, they want the teams to stand together. So mm-hmm. This basically is a tempest in a teapot, because it does not matter to anyone, ultimately. This doesn't change. Right. This doesn't change policing in America. This doesn't change the respect for the American flag that individuals have. Either you have it or you don't. I mean, and in the meantime, it does makes me uncomfortable that the president is, you know, demanding fealty and fidelity to because he demands it, because he's demanding it as the president. And that's not the role of the president of the United States.
I fully agree with you. Yeah, I fully agree with you. And like I said, I'm not questioning their rights to do things. And I am critical of the president getting involved. But I will say, though, you know, you can't twerk in the end zone in the NFL.
Yeah, you can now, though. You can now.
They still have rules. I don't think about it.
They did change that. Which, by the way, I don't know if you saw the Bears game, but there was a moron in a Bears uniform
that did something
on
really
Sunday
worse than twerking.
Stopped at the 1 yard line to prove
I
a point.
Saw that.
That was
and then
timing.
Got stripped of the ball.
We wish he had twerked instead in
what
the end zone.
A moron
and made it there, but that didn't happen.
The best thing. The best thing he had going for him was we won.
That's the only thing he had going. All right, let me very quickly, I want to ask you about this before we let you go. All right, Bob Corker just announced that he is not going to run again for his seat, Senator Bob Corker. There have been a number of stories in both the Post and the Times about people, Republicans even, you know, who are in the majority, getting out because they are they're not sure that this is still the kind of job that they want to do, or they don't want to put up with social media. They don't want to necessarily put up with Trump, whatever it happens to be. What do you make of this movement? You're a Republican in the House of Representatives. I mean, are you hearing your colleagues talk about things like this?
Yeah, there are people that are, you know, they've come here. Folks in my class came here. They've been here for a while. They've tried out the majority. They've tried it with the president now. And there's a lot of frustration. I'm frustrated at our failure to get health care done. I hope we can get tax reform done. And I think there's a lot of folks that say, you know, look, and not that we take this job whatsoever for granted. It's an honor to do it. But they look and say, you know, look, I've got a family at home, or I've got a business practice back home. I did the best I could, and it's time to go. It's sad to lose people like Bob Corker, because he's really good. But we've transitioned in our politics to this idea of purity tests, and the Democrats are dealing with it now when they're asked about if they support Bernie Sanders' single-payer plan, and people are not given the flexibility anymore to practice the art of politics, which is, you know, getting negotiations done, getting things done. And it's just turned into a constant litmus test on every issue, and I think a lot of people are frustrated with that.
All right, Congressman, thank you very much.
Thanks, Congressman.
Appreciate it.
You bet. Anytime, guys.
All right, now, wait, let me just ask you really quickly. Do you use, have you ever used the OxyClean when you're doing the laundry to get the stains out?
Or the Tide wipe pen?
The Tide wipe pen, I have one around here because I always spill coffee.
See, those are useful.
See, that's good. Ever...
But all it does is spread out the stain bigger. But
yeah, that's true. I've noticed that. And then it's like, sometimes, oh, you have a stain.
Sometimes true, because it disintegrates it, but then it redistributes it.
Well, especially with the pen. That's you ever notice that with the pen, Mark? Yeah. It's like, woo, suddenly it's a big blue blob.
Let me just tell you, what you got to do is you got to make sure that you know, the Tide pen, you got to use the hard part of it to just kind of scrape at it and get it in
it. Lift it
lift it and just kind of move it around. It's pro tip. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's pro tip.
That's right.
All right.
Well, the guy that spills wine usually, but him.
Thank you. Hey, I got to go. All right. Thank you, Congressman.
Bye, Congressman Kinzinger.
I'm going to take that as an insult.
He was trying to out-laundry you.
Mm-hmm. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, Tom Skilling's going to join us.
Yay. Need to talk to Tom. Some changes on the way.
And then we're going to be kneeing also in the 4 o'clock hour because you got Mike Tomlin, the coach of the Steelers, explains what happened on Sunday here. I wish you could explain what happened with our own player on Sunday here with Marcus Cooper Sr. I would like that. The Coop.
I think it's hard for them to explain how they lost that game, but that's another topic of conversation.
I'd like to ask Mr. Cooper a question or two about that.
Yes. Did you see, though, Alejandro Villanueva is giving interviews today saying that he feels embarrassed.
We're going to play that audio, yes.
Okay, good, because that, oh, wow. A lot of opinions about that kind of what's going on there.
And he says he didn't stand by his team that moment.
But he's an Army Ranger who chose to stand up and put his hand on his heart for the flag. Embarrassed?
We'll get to it. We'll get to it. And you know what? And I just want to also point out, there's another bad guy in all of this. True bad guy that we can all agree on.
Oh, good. Roger Stone.
No. He is. I don't know. We can't all agree on him because the people who love the insanity that goes on in Washington are going to love Roger Stone because he was good and goofy today. But we'll get to that. Okay. We will play some of him,
Someone in the NFL.
Actually, a beloved institution of yours in the NFL that did something really bad that we will all agree on.
Not impossible.
Yeah.
That's impossible.
No. It's not.
If it's Tom Brady, then it's impossible.
It's not just possible. It happened, and you won't believe it.
Okay.
And Tom Brady did the wrong thing.
Impossible.
Yes.
Also impossible.
Because he had an opportunity to fix it, and he didn't fix it. So I'm going to explain all that. And then I'm going to want you to have to explain why you're...
He's still the greatest of all time.
The GOAT. Mm-hmm. Why TB12 is still the GOAT. Because in my estimation, he's not the GOAT. He's a GOAT.
Mm-hmm.
He's a goof.
It sounds
like a separate issue.
An easy, easy, easy thing to explain.
I don't think it is. I think you're going to have more trouble than you think. It's all coming your way. But first, Judy Pilak. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN.
You just heard Tom. The heat wave ends. It's coming to an end, at least.
Tom, is that true? We just heard Tom, but I want to hear the other Tom tell us if that's
true. Let's hear the Tom.
He was right. That guy you just heard, he was right.
All right.
You know, it's interesting. If you look at the European Center's forecast for next week, they redevelop an unseasonably hot dome of air more aggressively even than our U.S. model. And it wouldn't be hard to imagine another period of unusual warmth. But we'll see if that works out. They're kind of alone in that right now. But all of them agree next week will be well above average, about 10, 12 degrees above normal, which is still pretty nice for the opening few days of October.
So what do we have to account for this?
Couple of things. One, dryness. Dry air, dry soil heats up more vigorously than wet soil. Two, this is the hot air dome that spent all weekend or all summer out west. They had the hottest summer ever recorded out in the western United States. And that dome of air just took up residence there and didn't move.
Can a dome of air do that for an entire season?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There are mechanisms by which, you place a dome of air in a particular area and it just doesn't want to move. What encouraged it to move eastward, I think, were these vigorous tropical cyclones from Harvey to Irma to Maria to Jose. Every one of these things vents huge amounts of air out the top. It's like air going out the top of a chimney. Mm-hmm. And if you ever watch a hurricane moving in on the southeast, the one time you'll get 100-degree temperatures through the deep south in many cases, when you got a hurricane hundreds of miles away coming at them, and this air sinks ahead of it after coming out the top of the clouds, the top of the storm, and this subsidence produces compressional warming. Because as air sinks through the atmosphere, it's exposed to higher barometric pressures and pressure down here at ground level, and so you heat, you compress a gas, you heat it up. So, you know, it's a marriage of all these unusual factors that set this thing up. Plus, superimpose on that the warming climate. That's another little factor as well. So a lot of things going on there.
How much of a factor do you think, in your professional opinion, do you think that that plays here?
You mean climate change?
Yeah.
I think it's it can't be denied. I think the ocean temperature warming is what's going on. You know, having watched for years, I've been doing this for about, you know, half a century, watching these hurricanes move along. And nowadays, we get these really detailed maps of ocean surface temperature that are sensed by satellite. We have such great tools available to us to remotely sense the atmosphere and the ocean surface. And I've watched time and again, whether it's Katrina, whether it's any of these storms this year or the Camilles or anything, the minute they hit, you know, warm ocean water with high ocean heat content, that's when these things really take off, providing you don't have any shear with the things. And then there's another factor I should have mentioned, too. I think the reason the tropics have been so active, somebody tweeted this, one of the scientists out of NCAR, and he pointed out that shear in the tropical atmosphere over the Atlantic Basin is probably at its lowest level since 2010, and this may be because of La Niña is developing out in the equatorial Pacific, and that lightens up upper-level winds through the Atlantic Basin, interestingly enough, some distance away from the place where the waters are cooling along the equatorial Pacific. So La Niña may have played a role in this, or at least its development, because it looks like we're going to have a La Niña winter this year. Mm-hmm. And that's
and that means more precip for us with warmer temperatures?
Well, you know what? We looked at La Niña, and you know, the common wisdom is it's near normal temperatures with wild swings from Arctic air to Pacific air. But we looked at all the summers and all the winters that have accompanied La Niña, and we found there actually still is a slight above normal bias in the temperature. But you do get volatility to the winters that is even a little more than some winters. You know, we expect to see some Arctic air at some point, but you'll switch from an Arctic air mass to a mild Pacific air mass.
So you get 60-degree temperature swings.
Yeah, exactly.
In a day or two.
And when you average it out over the high, you know, we could be in the middle of a sub-zero spell, but when, you know, a week later you have Pacific air come in and that warms it up. And yeah. So when you average all these ups and downs out, you still get a slight bias toward an above normal temperature. And there's about 60% of La Niña winters have had more rain or snow than their counterparts.
Oh, God.
So,
because we had like nothing last year, right? We had a little bit in December, and then January and February, it was like
really.
There was nothing going.
Yeah.
It's true.
It really is true.
Speaking,
and then a little bit in March, and we weren't here for it, but we heard about it.
We were in Huatulco, Mexico, yeah. Which is what's a perfect time to take off.
And, you know, it's really amazing. We've talked in this office, one of my colleagues, Paul Merzlock, he and I are the snow lovers on the staff here, and we have to put up with Bill Snyder's telling us where we can go with our thought about snow. But at any rate, we were commenting, and I think it's true, about we're not developing the same sort of barbarically cold Arctic air masses in the Arctic regions. I mean, look at last winter. North Pole was at times up to near freezing, which is 50 degrees above normal for them. So there's a lot going on in the Arctic, and so you get cold spells and you get snow on a warming planet, but they don't cover the same amount of area and they don't occur with the frequency they did. So that's this notion it can't get colder, it can't snow. It actually can snow more because the atmosphere is as a whole is holding more water vapor. I mean, look at these phenomenal snows in New England that we've seen in recent years.
I know,
but
because when we get it, it seems like everything is just supersized now.
Exactly.
No matter what we get more extreme of whatever. We get extreme drought, we get extreme rain, we get extreme extreme heat, we get extreme cold.
And look at the way they're all tied together. You know, tropical cyclones, vetting air out the top. We have an unseasonable warmth up here. Also, dryness. When air sinks, it doesn't produce rain. So we're in the middle of a drought here. We came off, we had records, river levels only the early part of the summer, and people out of their homes with flooding. Here we are closing off the season, and it's dry, and everything's looking burned out. And we've had 38% or normal rain. This partially is due to the presence of these active storms, I think, in the tropics as well, because that same subsidence that heats us up also defeats rain production. So it's amazing how one, you know, there's a tit-for-tat type of relationship here with these anomalies.
Tom, I know you said it's going to drop 15 or 20 degrees over the next few days, so we'll feel that. A lot of people will find that comfortable. And then it's going to warm up again, and then you've got the marathon the following weekend, so people are hoping that it doesn't, that trend doesn't continue.
You know what? At this distance, it looks like an above-normal temperature period. I think it's unsafe to go much beyond that and the specifics, but I'll tell you, I'll keep an eye on that, and I'll let you know. As I've been so busy with just the next 5-10 days, I haven't looked carefully.
I know.
It's been wacky,
a lot of
hasn't
homework.
It?
Yeah.
Yes.
They kept it. By the way, I talked to a friend of mine that I met down on the British Virgin Islands on Tortola today. It's the first time I've gotten a phone call. She actually called me. She's a cab driver, and we had a wonderful time. We drove around Tortola out there, and she showed me all the spots, and we really developed a friendship. And in fact, she calls, she watches our weather shows on the computer out there. Mm-hmm. So I wondered how she and her family had fared through this. And her name is Muriel. And I said, Muriel, are you okay? I said, I'm glad to hear your voice. She said, yeah. I said, what'd you think about what you just went through? She said, oh, Tom. She said, we've never seen anything like this before. Mm-hmm. I said, did your home survive? She said, yes, with some mud in it, but she said others didn't. And she said the little resort I had stayed at the first time is gone. It's just been wiped out. And she said there's no water, no electricity, limited phone service. They have only a few cell towers up. And she said, we're hungry. She said, there isn't enough food. Mm-hmm. So they're bringing food in, but
and this is BVI. This is British
BVI.
Virgin
House. Yes, indeed. And
because the French and the British that still have significant sway in some of those places around the Caribbean,
they were slow to respond.
Now you're hearing from Puerto Rico that they're concerned about the U.S. response and how quick it is. And the president's saying, and this is true, I mean, it is an island. It's hard to get the response as quickly.
You can't drive in with stuff.
But the United States Navy can. And that's the thing, is that's where, you know, you start to wonder about humanitarian response by the Navy here, which you know, we do in other parts of the world.
Right.
And we do need to, and as you know, much as they can do, and the cruise ship industry, I hate to, you know, tell them what to do, but they can certainly help getting people into, especially, you know, the Puerto Rico is, it's an interesting island in the sense it's about 3 million people. It's about, you know, the size, a little bit bigger than the size of Chicago, essentially, in terms of it's 100 miles long. It is sort of like the city of Chicago. On an island, right? And but most of the population lives in and around San Juan.
Yeah.
And so to get to that and to get to those people and try to get electricity going and all that, and to maybe use the sort of, you know, LSTs and the kind of naval equipment that they've got, these ships that have amphibious landing capability.
Right. It takes our military
those trucks
to do
in.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, exactly. We're going to have to. This is the United States. This is Puerto Rico is the United States of America,
it is.
And it needs to be addressed as such. I mean, if this were happening in Hawaii, believe me, we would be out there doing this. The problem is the military has been sort of kicked off of Puerto Rico because of Vieques and stuff like that. The island is just south of Puerto Rico that has been used as a bombing range and all that. It's been a very politically charged moment. There was an attempt actually in Puerto Rico to try to disassociate from the United States. But at this moment, this is our responsibility, and we got to do something.
Well, you know, Roe, too, we're in an era where it was clear there was an incredible disaster unfolding. I mean, even, you know, you knew whoever got under one of these storms was going to pay mightily for this and dearly. And it seemed, you know, you would think that the response would have been calibrated appropriately based on that knowledge, you know. It takes a long time to put all this together. But, you know, I heard the director saying, what's his name, Block?
FEMA director?
Yes, the FEMA director. And he said, you know, this is evidence that we haven't taken national emergencies seriously enough. We talk a good line and we try to do some. But he said the planning we've done has been... they're doing everything they can, but it's...
I don't think there was good planning for Puerto Rico, and you can blame every administration going back to Eisenhower if you want for that. But the point is that right now these are people. You saw the mayor of San Juan crying on television. The governor, very concerned about what's happening. Around his island.
Well, now you worry about disease. Noticed I'm getting the printouts too from the British Virgin Islands government, and they're worried about mosquito infestations. They're warning people to drain water that's standing because they can't fog spray it because the vegetation's gone and it's too much a risk to the population there. So they're trying to individually address these mosquito breeding areas. But, you have the threat of disease. It's hot down there. If you've ever been down there,
have a huge amount of, pardon the expression, but these are Americans. It's not going to be like a refugee situation like you would have with foreign refugees. But you're going to have Puerto Rican refugees coming to the United States who are like, we got to get out because their houses are destroyed. Many of them have family.
And their jobs are gone. The tourism industry is a big part of that area. How are you going to get tourists in there to spend money and rev up that business again? This is a cataclysmic disaster down there.
Just day-to-day life, too, as you said, 60% of Puerto Rico is without water right now. They're bathing in natural springs. They said that, their farms are destroyed.
Crops are gone.
Talk about food shortages. It's a big deal for them right now.
And roads are still closed. I mean, one thing about a hurricane, as are harbors and even the airports.
But we should talk about the airport here for a second. One of the problems that they're having there is that their radar got knocked out.
Sure.
And they have the runways are open, but their controllers left the island, and the radar got knocked out. Now, I know this as fact, that the United States military has the capability to be able to mount an airfield, actually place an airfield, an active airfield in, with all the equipment that they need to do that.
Sure.
And to create a runway and all that. And they don't need to do that in this case, but they're capable of doing that in a very short period of time.
Yes. Yep.
And so using that sort of technology, the United States, this is a great exercise, no matter how you look at it,
hone all of our skills.
Right. And these guys, and this is what these guys train for. This is what they are there for. This is the United States military. And you need to deploy them, whether it's guardsmen or active duty, into this situation to use their skills and to game for a situation that is really happening.
Yes.
Yeah. They just announced U.S., the Military Sealift Command hospital ship, ginormous hospital
ship, the Comfort,
USNS Comfort is heading toward Puerto Rico now.
And, initially I read a report where that was dispatched back to Norfolk, Virginia. And now they've finally dispatched it down there. But, that's what I mean. That something like that, a ship like that, should have been dispatched right from Key West.
They were concerned that they were using it in Key. I think they were trying to use that. They were keeping it, mounting it. They were stationing it on the East Coast to do recovery there.
Sure.
Because, and that's the other piece here, is that part of the Keys is still in trouble.
Sure.
Houston is still in trouble.
Yeah.
Parts of Florida are still, just this week I was talking to people who are on the west coast of Florida from Fort Myers. People are just now able,
this weekend, were
able to get into RSW, the airport down there, to be able to get to their homes where, to figure out what the problem is there.
Sure.
So this is, I know this is a massive thing, but you have a humanitarian crisis developing on this island that is ours in the Caribbean, in Puerto Rico, and it needs to be addressed.
It's true.
Politics be damned here. This is a good opportunity for the United States military with all of its might and its incredible structural capacity that
Absolutely.
It has to be able to use some of that. And that's, I think, would be a good moment.
You're welcome.
And then we could show a little something to that imp over there in North Korea. Swim something. This is how we take care of our own, pal.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Tom. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Good to talk to you.
All right.
October 9th, Monday Night Football is on WGN-TV. Bears-Vikings kick off October 9th at 7, following WGN-TV Sports Monday Night. Pregame, 6:30.
I'm a little busy. I can't make it.
You got to be there, Coach. Sorry. It's your team.
I do.
We're counting on you. It's a big deal.
Oh, boy.
Hang in there, Coach.
Whole world will be watching. No pressure. Monday Night Football.
Oh, boy. All right. I'm not there. I can't be there.
Oh, no.
You know, although you got to...
Can you take Cooper with you? Kidding. He's going to be
I bet back. He played great.
We like him again.
Right. I don't know what that was. Oh my God! I pray though that they've spoken to him. I'd like to. Why couldn't they videotape that conversation and just let us know? Could the Bears make us feel a little bit better about being Bears fans? It's become very hard.
Yeah,
very hard to be a Bears fan.
It's been painful, but it was a nice win.
It was not a nice win. It was a win
against a good team.
I've never been as angry at a win as I was at that one.
Never hit your head against a wall after a win.
I don't even know what to make of it.
I do.
I would like to see, but you know, it's funny because people are finally on to what we on this program have been saying about Mike Glennon this entire time. He is not an offensive weapon.
Yeah, what was it OB said yesterday? No legs and no arms.
Right.
Got a quarterback.
He's not good.
Right.
I mean, he's clearly a backup quarterback in the NFL. He's not a legitimate starting quarterback.
Right. He's a guy that he's a game manager who can keep the ball moving. He can hand
check
off the
down,
ball.
Check down, check down, check down.
Although there were a number of times where he forgot how to hand off to. There were a few moments like that.
Mm-hmm.
The plays bust up, and then all of a sudden he's got to go. Oh, my God. When you see him running wild and free, it's like I yeah. literally have seen sloths move faster.
I know. There was a lot of forgetting in that game, though. Cooper forgot where the end zone was. We had, you know, some issues there.
I swear to God, I thought it was in the end zone.
I thought I was there.
Yeah.
Could have sworn, Coach.
Yeah. Oh, my God. No, I was there. No, you weren't.
No, that wasn't.
Yeah. No.
It's clearly marked.
No. Yeah. See that orange thing over on the side? See what that is? That tells you right there. Oh. Was he 6 years in the NFL, right?
Classic mix-up. I think he's in his fourth year.
Fourth year? Two fourth teams. This is his third team, I believe.
Yeah, he signed a 3-year contract with the Bears in March. Yeah. And to his credit, I know nobody wants to hear this, but he did play a pretty good game at cornerback.
Well, he's going to have to play. He's going to have to single-handedly win a game.
He better be
now.
All pro the rest of the season.
Does the cornerback have to know where the end zone is? Is that important or no?
At times. At times. Yeah. That's fairly important.
Yeah. As a cornerback, he would have to run down a guy, right? That from behind.
Or keep a receiver out of the end zone.
Yeah.
You know?
So he would probably know what that was like. Oh, good.
You got to start from step one with these Bears. This is the end zone. This is midfield.
All right, now everybody, now you're all going to line up on the line right here. Now you're called the center. You're going to hold on to the ball, and then you're going to pass it between your legs in back of you to the quarterback. Now he's super tall.
Yeah, really. So.
That was the other problem too.
Yeah, maybe that was.
How many long snaps? And I know they've had a problem here because they've got guys subbing in here. But how many shotgun snaps did Glennon? You know, that either were on the ground to Glennon or that he dropped.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
It seems sloppy, but then what was that about? Is it
a lot of drop passes as well, as Bears pointed out today at practice, that Glennon wasn't all that bad if you looked at all the drop passes.
Yeah, just when like you stop wasn't all and that think about it, I got to tell you something, in practice, we're catching those.
Yeah.
Catching those.
You know, he wasn't all that bad in week two, except for those two interceptions and the fumble. But if you wipe out those, it was a pretty good game.
Right,
but
great.
Two interceptions and a fumble.
Oh, good, Gav.
Thank you, Coach.
Trubisky, week 7. It's going to happen.
Yep.
I think week 5. Okay. I think week 5.
I'll go week 6 then.
I'm going week sauce is what I'm going here. That's all I'm saying. All right. Here is Judy Pilak. She is standing by with her news, her big story. Rokan Joe with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. All right. Brought my guitar in, by the way. I just thought I'd play a little something for you.
Wow, you're good.
Thank you. See what I did there on the high string? Watch me. Yeah, pretty good.
It's a lot. P more peaceful than I thought you'd play.
Yep. That's the only thing I know. It's the only song I know. Oh, God. All right. All right. What do we have? Okay. Listen, coming up, I just want to tell you this. It's very important. Coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, Rear Admiral Gary Benelli is going to be with us. He's the chairman of the Navy SEAL Foundation. He used to be a Navy SEAL himself, and there's a very special event coming up this weekend that he's going to tell us about, Evening of Tribute, that's coming up. Actually, it's coming up tomorrow, not even this weekend. It's coming up tomorrow night. So we'll get you details on that. All right. Now, I ask you, this is kind of an interesting deal. You brought this up a few minutes ago, Anna, about this Villanueva guy.
Yeah.
He was the one Pittsburgh Steeler that came out of the tunnel and stood for the national anthem. Now Alejandro Villanueva is a West Point graduate. He was a decorated United States soldier in combat, and he is also featured on one of those USAA commercials.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he's one of those guys that, there's a couple football players who are veterans, and they use them for the NFL and for the USAA endorsements. So he has an endorsement directly related to his military service.
Hmm. Former Army Ranger and Bronze Star recipient and served 3 tours of duty. And very
really impressive
devoted,
guy.
Yeah, very devoted to. He said, military is what made me, and it was so important to who I am today.
Yes. Now, what is, I think, also fascinating is that the CNBC reported yesterday, now, how they know this, I am not certain, that he, after that happened, he had the number one selling jersey in the NFL.
Right. More than Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and the usuals.
But that would have happened, but that was reported at about 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Pretty quickly.
That would have been 23 hours after, or no, 25 hours after this happened.
But you can tell if it online sales, for sure.
Who can tell that?
Well, it was the name of the site. I wanted to say Fanboy, but it's not. It was one of those sites that tracks jersey sales.
I wonder if it's just the most popular at the moment.
Well, it's 25 in those 25 hours. What they're arguing is that was the most sold. All right. So now that may well be true. I don't know, but it seems like a little more of a, and we'll have to see what that does over time. Does he become the, at least in the first day, this is my question, does he become basically the poster, if you will, for the anti-kneeling resistance? Well, he took himself out of that today.
Yeah, he did. Here it is. NFL Shop, by the way. They tracked the sales. Now he was...
Do you think NFL Shop, that's owned by NFL, you think NFL Shop is going to release that? I think Roger Goodell wants that released. If that is absolutely true, then Roger Goodell made a phone call.
They haven't denied it to say that they've got the CNN reported it, NBC reported it. I mean, it was widely reported that it was. A lot of people didn't even know really much about him before this, but it makes sense that within that,
well, he stood out literally
24-hour period, right?
Yes, yeah, he did exactly. And that commercial, I noticed that commercial playing yesterday during the game. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting because of all of the stuff that had happened or on Sunday, I should say, not yesterday, but Sunday. All right, so now let's move forward to what he says today, and I think that this is very interesting. He comes first of all to the defense of his teammates.
Every single one of my teammates is extremely supported and extremely patriotic, in this locker room. And I can not only say that for this locker room, I can say it across the NFL and every single player that I've gone against.
All right. And did they know what you were going to do?
Very few players knew that I was going to the tunnel because I only asked the team leadership. And so because of that, I didn't give them an opportunity to stand with me. Because when everybody sees an image of me standing by myself, everybody thinks that the team and the Steelers are not behind me, and that's absolutely wrong. I've made Coach Tomlin look bad, and that is my fault, and that is my fault only. I've made my teammates look bad, and that is my fault only. And I made the Steelers also look bad, and that is my fault and my fault only.
Wow.
It's amazing how he feels, and he actually used this word, embarrassed by what he did.
Right. Here's his final thought.
Unwillingly, I've made a mistake. And so, you know, I've talked to my teammates about the situation. Hopefully they understand it. If they don't, I still have to live with it because the nature of this debate is causing a lot of very heated reactions from fans, from players, and it's undeserving to all the players and coaches from this organization.
Wow. There's a man's man right there.
He really is. I just think for an Army Ranger who's served three tours of duty, it's exactly why I feel so passionate about the flag and people like that who defend our freedoms and the comforts of what we live in this country. And for him to feel embarrassed for standing and putting
Well, he's not embarrassed for standing. He's embarrassed for reflecting poorly on his teammates.
But how does it do that?
He didn't give them an opportunity. He's making the argument that he did not give them the opportunity to know what he was doing so that they could join him if they chose to join him. He basically went out on his own without discussing it because the team had just decided they were going to stay in the locker room.
One of his teammates said, "I just assumed that Villanueva would be excluded from that because of his strong feelings about the military." And, you know, they felt that, you know, he was going to, they kind of knew that how strongly he felt about it. And in those discussions, he voiced his opinion about that in the locker room to say, "Hey, I do feel strongly about this."
And I'm sure there were other people that felt strongly. So that's why he feels like, well, I wasn't the only one that wanted to go out there, but I'm the only one that did it.
But he also wants to make it perfectly clear. And I think this is the incredibly honorable piece of what he's doing here.
Oh, yeah.
Is that he's making it clear that the rest of his teammates are not unpatriotic.
No. I think that's an important point.
That this is a conversation that they had. They were trying to stay out of the fray. Here's Mike Tomlin, the coach, explaining how he did not want that actually thrown into the politics of this.
To be quite honest with you, man, I didn't appreciate our football team being drug into politics this weekend. And I'm sure that that's a global perspective.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, I would imagine there were a lot of coaches and general managers and owners that didn't want this to have, they didn't want to have to deal with this.
It was a tough decision, I think, for a lot of team members. I mean, the teams in general to decide. You saw what the Dallas Cowboys did yesterday, deciding to kneel together, even Jerry Jones. A lot of people were surprised by that before the anthem. And then,
Donald Trump being chief among them.
He was pretty shocked by that.
He did what? Jerry did what?
Villanueva is interesting, though, because he was critical of Kaepernick at the time. You know, he was doing this pretty much alone in the preseason of last year. And he said, "I stand with you on the issues you're talking about. I totally understand. And I'm with you. And as a minority and as a person who believes strongly in human rights, And that racism is alive in America, I will fight for that cause in another way. I just feel strongly about the way you're doing it." So he's been very consistent on this issue.
Well, Villanueva was sort of also detailing what went down, and he was in the tunnel. The Steelers weren't in the locker room. They were actually
right
in the tunnel just
That's
off the field, and he talked to the captains on the team and said, "I want to get a look at the flag." That's what and they said, "Yeah, go ahead." And then he had planned on going back to the tunnel with the team, but he said it was awkward because the anthem started, and it would have looked horrible if cameras caught him turning around and walking back to the tunnel. That would have sparked even more outrage. So it was just sort of a weird thing that kind of it turned into a mess for him and his teammates.
Yeah, it was hard. You're right, Kevin, because when you're watching the Bears game on television, it looked like Villanueva was the only guy there. But there are pictures that have emerged that you can see clearly his teammates and members of looks like the team and staff are standing
right
quite a distance behind him in the tunnel. Yeah. And some of them have their hands over their hearts, and they all appear to be standing.
And
I feel bad for the guy.
I know. Don't you?
Well, he's like such a good guy.
Yeah, and he's taking full responsibility.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is what a true man does. He takes full responsibility for his actions, and when he feels like he has made a mistake, he says it, unlike other people I know that just deny it all the time, like myself. All right, here's Coach Tomlin one last time on where he feels his team is in all of this.
In regards to the anthem, you know, these are divisive times. I've been very proud that our team has always been a team that's been respectful of the anthem. We've had 1%, 100% participation in the anthem since all of these things started. Obviously, our guys have opinions regarding social injustice and so forth, but they never use that as a platform.
All right. I wonder what it'll be. My sense is by week five, the Bears are going to have a new quarterback, and no one's going to be talking about this.
I know.
That's going to be my sense.
Visit illinoisstate.edu/WGN. Mention my name, Kevin Powell. They'll throw in a free T-shirt. That's illinoisstate.edu/WGN.
How about that? Free Fear T-shirt the right there.
That's right.
I am fearing the... What's happening with them football-wise this year?
3-0. They're off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, there you go. No big deal.
They're in the top 10 in the rankings for the FCS.
Football Championship Series teams.
There you go.
All right.
That's easy. Looking good.
We're very good. I think it's all because of Kevin Powell. I think a lot of people are confused by this.
And Adam Kinzinger.
Adam Kinzinger. Richard Roper went to
Illinois
State.
Richard Roper. John Malkovich. Jane Lynch.
Man.
Yeah.
Craig Robinson. Doug Collins. He's with the Bulls now.
Gee.
I've never heard of any of those people. Yeah. How about that? Illinois State right there.
Fear the Bird.
Fear the Bird. Right. I'm already so scared, Kev. I can't fear it anymore. I can't fear the bird. I've gotten over my fear of the bird.
Okay.
I mean, who is this bird that we have to be so afraid of, and why are we constantly afraid of the bird? I don't know. All right, coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, you got a top five you won't believe, and then we're going to check in. Kevin is in St. Louis right now as the Cubs could clinch the playoffs for the first time in 100 years, over 100 years, that they would be able to do that. So stay right here. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. It is that time of day again, so that means it is time for the most important part of the day.
It's the Top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Brought to you by Builder Supply Outlet. True outlet prices every day. Now home of the Edge, kitchen and bath showroom.
It's the Top 5 on the Rokan Show. Let's go!
And I have a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet in Broadview. True outlet prices every day. That's the home of the Edge. That's the state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom.
Nice.
It's in Broadview. It's also open in Orland Park. Don't miss out. Would you like $50 in a gift certificate? You would? All right. Well, then, 312-981-7200 is your phone number, and you're the 19th caller, and you rip us off. Still in kind of a Hawks moment here. So let's call it number 19.
Great.
When Mitchell, don't call him Mitch, Trubisky becomes president of the United States or the Bears quarterback, I will change it to number 10.
Good.
Not until then.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Fair.
Sort of.
Number 5.
During a news conference today, they was having the Prime Minister of Spain, President of Spain, actually. Our President, Trump, was asked whether he was preoccupied with the NFL controversy instead of addressing more important issues.
Well, I wasn't preoccupied with the NFL. I was ashamed of what was taking place because, to me, that was a very important moment. I don't think you can disrespect our country, our flag, our national anthem. To me, the NFL situation is a very important situation. I've heard that before. About was I preoccupied? Not at all. Not at all. I have plenty of time on my hands. All I do is work. And to be honest with you, that's an important function of working. It's called respect for our country.
Here's the issue. It was kind of over, right? This isn't really about Twitter. This all started in that rally.
Right, in Alabama, where he was down there pushing for the incumbent, Luther Strange, for the Senate.
For like a matter of months, by the way, because he was the guy that replaced Jeff Sessions, appointed by the governor. And now it looks
so
like
big rally.
Luther Strange is likely to lose in today's runoff down there with Judge Roy Moore, who the president kept calling Ray on a radio show when he was talking about him because he wasn't sure. That guy, did you see that guy brandished a gun yesterday?
No.
At his rally?
Oh, no.
Because he said, they're all kind of, there's all kind of commercials saying I'm weak on the Second Amendment. And then he pulls out a gun and waves it in the air. He goes, am I weak now? And everybody's like, yay!
Look, they're playing to the crowd, and that's exactly what the president was doing, I believe, when he made those comments that have now, launched 1,000 ships.
Yes, and so the president was talking about that, and he exacerbated it because there wasn't... The NFL, the biggest story out of this weekend in the NFL would have been that imbecile Marcus Cooper Sr. stopping on the 1-yard line. That would have been the biggest story out of the NFL. Instead, it was everybody, you know, taking a knee, and Alejandro Villanueva, and then last night Jerry Jones locking arms with his players and taking a knee before the national anthem. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, you know, he did that by calling them sons of bitches and doing that on a stage.
The rhetoric was inflammatory.
In Alabama, he didn't need to do that. He made this bigger than it had been because, I mean, and for no other reason. And if you think there's any other reason for this, you are sadly and sorely mistaken. It's because he knew he was going to lose health care this week. He wanted to change the conversation. He needed a pivot point. And that's why he did it, because he wasn't doing it. He could have done it on the first week of the NFL. He didn't do it. Right. It was not that big of a deal. It wasn't going on with increasing regularity. And now he's turned it into something by calling these guys a name. These are Americans. And in the meantime, he's got to deal with Puerto Rico, and the governor there is saying that, you know, this is a crisis. It's a humanitarian crisis in the making. But then the president said,
the governor said, we are doing a great job. In fact, he thanked me specifically for FEMA and all of the first responders in Puerto Rico. And we're also mentioning with that the U.S. Virgin Islands. It was devastated. So we are totally focused on that. But at the same time, it doesn't take me long to put out a wrong, and maybe we'll get it right. I think it's a very important thing for the NFL to not allow people to kneel during the playing of our national anthem, to respect our country and to respect our flag. Okay?
Well, that's up to the NFL. The NFL is a private business, and I think that most people who support Donald Trump would have been mad if the president of the United States were mad when the former president of the United States, any of them, but Barack Obama specifically, would have told a business what to do or an industry what to do. They were mad about emissions and other kinds of things that Barack Obama was through executive order was trying to, you know, get to stop in an industry. If this industry decides, if the NFL industry, the football, professional football industry in America decides it wants to do that, it will do it. President of the United States, does he get to tell them to do that? Is that the kind of America that the people who voted for Donald Trump want? Because you're wrapping yourself in the flag. And don't you, I think, remember that that's the last vestige of scoundrels, right? When people start to throw that stuff around, when you start wrapping yourself in this kind of imagery and that becomes the issue for you, something else is going wrong.
Well, he knows what he's doing. I think there's no question of that. I mean, but to say that he doesn't care about Puerto Rico probably is inaccurate. To say that they need a lot of help right now, absolutely accurate. We've talked about it. 60% without electricity. They have nothing there. Water supply. It's truly catastrophic.
I'm certainly not saying he doesn't care about Puerto Rico. I don't know what he cares about and he doesn't care about, other than I know that he says he cares about this, which I don't think he even does. But he's tweeted about the NFL 24 times, about Puerto Rico 4 times. It's an optics issue that he's got.
But
the people he thinks he's appealing to are going to be much more concerned about whether or not there's a guy kneeling, you know, at a national anthem than whether or not the Mexicans in Puerto Rico are actually getting any kind of help. Even though they're not Mexicans, they're Americans in Puerto Rico. People will misunderstand that joke. It was too subtle, I believe.
Do they like taco boats? They have those at Trump Tower, so I was just wondering.
Yeah. Too soon. Checking in at
number 4.
Now, speaking of all this,
yep.
Alejandro Villanueva, the Pittsburgh Steeler who came out of the tunnel at Soldier Field on Sunday, was the only Pittsburgh Steeler that was visible to the cameras and to people in the stands, put his hand over his heart, and he stood dutifully for the national anthem. He is a decorated veteran. He's a West Point graduate. He is a true American hero.
Yep.
He says he asked quarterback Ben Roethlisberger if he could stand in the tunnel for the national anthem, and Big Ben said yes.
After the meeting, based on my unique circumstances and based on the fact that I've served in the Army and that pretty much everything that is my life is related to the military, I asked Ben if there was a way to define the inside or where is it that we were going to stay And if I could watch the national anthem from the tunnel, and he agreed. He said the captains would be out there right behind me, and so this plan sort of morphed to accommodate this tough moral dilemma that I had in my hands, to where the players could be behind me in the tunnel.
Does it bother anyone that he is the only one who seems to be standing up and saying, I feel self-reflective or maybe even wrong about this divisive moment in sports? The one guy who actually fought for our freedom, the one who's been out there three tours of duty in Afghanistan, Army Ranger.
He's conflicted because he's got
team versus military, and it shouldn't have to be that.
But this isn't about. But again, I got to push back on this. He does it because this is important to him.
Yeah.
As an American, it is important to me as an American. I would, if it were not for the United States military, I would not have gone to college. I mean, this is I did not serve, but being the son of a career military person, the Air Force put me through college.
Sure, and I feel strongly about it too.
That was so. That's an important moment for me, and I get it, and I understand where he's coming from, and I agree with him on that. But that is also but the point here is, as Americans individually have the right to if they want to kneel, they can kneel. If they don't want to put their hand on their heart, they don't have to. The president forgets to put his hand on his heart all the time till his wife, born in Slovenia, reminds him to do that.
Yeah, but even Alejandro Villanueva is saying that he does believe in rights and all that, but he does say that he wishes that his team and those around the league would stand and salute the flag as a commitment and to those who serve and protect us and stand up for our freedoms. And he hopes that we can stand united in respect for the people on the front lines protecting our freedom, keeping us safe. That's what he'd like to see.
Again, and that's true. I'm sure he would. I would like to see that too. But you cannot demand, as Americans, you cannot demand that people do that. It is not constitutional.
But isn't it weird that he's the only one who feels
black
embarrassed?
Black people would like to see some justice for themselves.
Absolutely. That's and I think Villanueva says,
you know
that
I mean?
Too.
That's what everyone is doing it for their own reasons, which is what America is. Nobody has to stand, sit, kneel, or even listen to the national anthem, per the Supreme Court.
And people go, well, if I did that in my work, I'd get fired. Well, they don't play the national anthem at
exactly.
your work.
Exactly.
So, I don't know.
Plus, there's no rule against it, so President Donald Trump is actually probably right in the next step is the NFL actually either making a rule or not, because it's just going to get dragged out with what do teams do.
Well, there's no question.
If you act or if you don't act, it's still, sending a message.
Ratings are up for the first few minutes of the game, and then they're down for the rest of the games. And they're finding 64% of people polled believe that the players should stand, and that actually doesn't even fall along party lines. It's fairly diverse in terms of people who identify as Republican, Democrat, or even nonpartisan.
And does everyone agree that it's not even specifically about that? It's not about the flag.
That's true.
It's about this bigger issue, and it was the best stage they had, I guess, to do it. I just don't feel like anyone got together and discussed it for months and months and decided this was the best venue. It just happened. You know what I'm saying? It's so not about the national anthem or the flag.
And there here's the issue. There were a handful of people doing it in week two of the NFL, and then every team had to do something in week three because the president called them sons of bitches.
I know. Bothers me that you brought that up about him not putting his hand in his heart, because that is true. It's so important that he doesn't even remember to put his hand on his heart. Come on.
Until Melania reminded him.
Exactly. She's either slapping that hand away or putting it on his heart.
That's true. A lot of those shots.
We'll get to your three and your two and your one. But first, Violetta's got the WGN traffic trouble spots.
Then there's this October 9th, Monday Night Football. It's on WGN-TV. Bears-Vikings kick off October 9th at 7. Following WGN-TV Sports, Monday Night pregame, 6:30.
All right.
You didn't even ask about George Clooney's song about the NFL standing. Or no, poem. I'm sorry. Crafted a poem.
I wanted to make sure. Bringing out
the best in everyone.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe you can tell me about that on the other side.
I'm not sure you'll enjoy it.
I still have a bunch of things I've got to get to.
Right,
again, nobody was caring about it until he brought it up. It was like over. It was over.
It's
he
a
made
poem.
A big deal out of it because he needed cover. Because the healthcare thing is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now George Clooney has a poem about it.
Oh, God.
Number three.
Roger Stone. Remember him? He's that crazy Roger Stone. If you watch that circus show on Showtime, Roger Stone, he was in the very famous episode from Russia with Love. He was he's a nut burger. There's no two ways around it. He was on Capitol Hill today talking to reporters after he met with the House Intelligence Committee in a closed-door session. He's under investigation for possibly being involved in Russian meddling in the presidential election. He's one of the triumvirate that's going to jail, in my opinion. You got Manafort, Stone. Roger Stone,
Flynn,
and Michael Flynn for sure. That's who the three I see going to jail. But anyway, he denied having any involvement or prior knowledge of leaked emails, even though he had said he'd actually tweeted out that Roger Podesta was going to be the next guy in the barrel right before the Podesta emails came out.
John, you mean?
Podesta? I mean, John Podesta. Mm-hmm. That's Roger Stone, John Podesta. Yeah, that's correct. Thank you. Yep. I apologize. I'd like to apologize for my teammates for that, too. Mm-hmm. He is accusing lawmakers of making false allegations.
I made the case that the accusation that I knew about John Podesta's email hack in advance was false. Had an opportunity to correct a number of the things that members of the committee had said about me, which they seemed to take in. I expressed my view that I am aware of no evidence whatsoever of collusion by the Russian state or anyone in the Trump campaign. I don't know whether the DNC was hacked. I don't know whether at all. I don't know that it was hacked by Russians. And now on the basis of this report, I tend to believe that it was an inside job.
Okay. Hey, what he needs to do now is he needs to, what we need to do, if you'd like to do this, you can go back and you watch, Showtime's got it on Showtime On Demand, or maybe you'll even be able to find it.
The circus.
The circus. Go look up From Russia with Love, The Circus, which was done a year ago.
It was a great episode.
And a little bit more than a year ago. Where he gets drunk at the Russian tea room.
Mm-hmm. And he brags
and
about his connections.
Bragging about his connections to
WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks and Guccifer and the whole thing.
That he had a direct line.
Yeah. So let's go back to that. He's going to jail.
Number two.
Two members of the Chicago Police Department have been reprimanded after being photographed taking a knee in support of the NFL protests over the weekend. Now, this, I do not think I'm going to go the other way on this. Chicago police officers in uniform, people in uniform, there are rules about this, and they cannot take a knee for that. It's a different, you know, that they're not technically citizens in the same sense that a football player is a citizen.
What do you mean by that? Just it's employment rules, isn't it?
It's but it's also they wear the flag on their uniform, right? They wear the flag of the city of Chicago, they wear the flag of the United States of America, whatever it happens to be, depending on the job that they have.
And also uniformed officers, the union says, barred from or not allowed to participate in partisan political
correct.
Kind of things.
Exactly.
And the code of conduct rules kind of apply here. The mayor even spoke out against it today.
Yes. But here is the woman they were taking the picture with. There was a civilian in the picture here who is an activist.
Mm-hmm.
And she is the one that basically talked them into doing it.
I think that what they did was heroic. I asked them, are you against racism? They say yes. I said, are you against police brutality? They say yes. I said, do you support Colin Kaepernick's decision? They say yes. This is my message to those officers. I stand behind you.
They have been.
Are they on desk duty? Or are they just reprimanded? Because there was also a little while back, right after the election, when a police car had a Make America Great hat in the front window, and that officer was reprimanded as well.
Okay. So that's where I part ways there. Yeah. NFL players can do whatever the hell they want because they're NFL players. Unless there's a rule in the NFL. Well, they can't actually wear Under Armour if it's a Nike team or whatever. However
or
that
any
works.
Kind of personal things on their heads or shoes.
Right. And that's because of Jim McMahon.
That is.
Number one.
So Dan Abrams and Nancy Grace got together again today on Good Morning America. I love when they put these two together. Both of them started on Primetime OJ, starring Rokon and June Grasso back in 1995.
And now they do legal face-offs? Kind of like,
yeah, I'll start right there. We're talking about Anthony Weiner. And, well, just imagine Nancy Grace's reaction to Anthony Weiner.
He could have gotten 10 years. He got a couple of months. They asked for 27 months. He got 21 months. Yes, I'm disheartened. I'm very disheartened. And he will repeat offend.
Now let's talk about how much time he deserves, right? And does it matter that he pled guilty?
Okay.
Does he get any credit for that?
Well, let me tell you this. He was caught red-handed. What could he do? He tried to blame the girl. He tried to use as a defense he was texting 19 other women at the time. How did that help? He claimed he didn't meet the girl. Look, here's the deal. He's done this many, many times. He pled guilty to one time. I am not impressed.
The judge has spoken.
All right.
I am not impressed.
Your girl.
There she is. All right, let's lock this thing up, shall we? Because we got to go.
The top five at five.
I brought my EDM machine in today, too.
Look at you.
Yeah.
So talented.
I know. I'm Mr. Musical. Hey, Kevin Powell is in St. Louis for us tonight, and I hope he's there for the last night that he can be in St. Louis. There's two opportunities for the Cubs to clinch tonight. By the way, St. Louis got eliminated last night by the Cubs, smacking them around and knocking nachos out of people's hands.
You know, I talked to that guy last night, actually. Mm-hmm. Went down there and had a chat with Nacho Man. He actually got three foul balls. He was signing nacho trays, and his selfie with Addison Russell got thousands of retweets. He was a celebrity last night.
For those who didn't see this last night, explain what happened during the game.
So in the second inning, there was a foul ball down the third base line. This particular gentleman, Andrew Gutermer, I believe his last name is, he was in the first row. He's a Cardinals fan. Addison Russell's flying from shortstop, trying to catch a foul ball. He doesn't see the wall, hits it, goes headfirst into this guy, this Cardinals fan, and his girlfriend. He was holding a tray of nachos, and as Russell was going, flying into the stands, his foot popped up and kicked the nacho tray out of this guy's hand, and the nachos flew all over the warning track. And everybody saw it. I mean, at first it looked bad. Like, everyone was like, "Oh my, is Russell okay? What happened here?" Then they show him on the video board, and everyone's cheering for him. The Cardinals actually bring him a fresh tray of nachos and a cold beer. And then Addison Russell, the following inning, ran out of the dugout with more nachos, gave him the nachos, took a selfie with him, shook his hand, and the whole night, because the game for the most part was a blowout, and of course, Cub fans were excited. By the way, there was a ton of Cub fans here last night, probably going to be a bunch more tonight, but he was sort of the storyline last night. And back real quick to the amount of Cub fans here, when Chris Bryant hit his homer last night, and this is sort of what I'm guessing happened, that as he was rounding first base, fireworks started going off. Like when a team hits a home run, the home crowd.
Yes, generally that happens at the home stadium when the home team does it, not the away team.
So I think the firework operator heard the roar of the crowd when Chris Bryant hit it and assumed a Cardinal had hit a home run. That's how many Cub fans were here last night. And two mortars went off, and everyone's like, "What just happened?" And I'm guessing that's what happened, that the pyrotechnician thought that a Cardinal hit a homer, because when Chris Bryant hit it, it sounded like when I was in Milwaukee last week. I mean, the crowd went nuts. So the past two series have been huge in terms of the fan.
Well, St. Louis has always been. I mean, when you go to Wrigley, and when St. Louis is in there, if the Cubs, you know, had not been good and the Cardinals had been, they outnumber at Wrigley too.
Right.
I mean, it is the best rivalry in the Cubs arsenal right now.
And then didn't they eliminate the Cardinals from the
division race? Cardinals actually have an outside shot at the wild card, but
it's going to be tough though, because they would have to climb over Milwaukee in that, wouldn't they?
Correct, and the Rockies. So they're so right now the NL wild card would be the Diamondbacks and the Rockies. The Rockies have a game and a half lead on Milwaukee, 2.5 game lead on the on the Cardinals. So it's a stretch. And for so many years, it felt like the Cubs had were looking up to the Cardinals. They were chasing the Cardinals in the division. 3 years later, after the Cubs had beaten the Cardinals in a postseason series, after the Cubs have won a World Series, the Cardinals are chasing the Cubs now all of a sudden.
Oh, it's too bad. Oh, hey, damn. What? I feel so bad for the Cardinals. Right. And, you know, Cardinals fans are insufferable. I mean, they just are.
Please.
They're a different breed.
Cubs fans are kind of, we're kind of nuts too, aren't we?
Well, at least we're, you know, I mean,
for Cubs fans,
we're very self-effacing, right? But the Cardinals fans are like second only to the Yankees.
Yeah, right. I think that's
in terms of obnoxiousity, because the reality is that the Cardinals really pretty much are the Yankees of the National League.
Mm-hmm. 11 World Series titles,
right? And they're and they like to tell you about how great they are. They love to tell you about Stan Musial. They tell you about this and about that.
And that red is so obnoxious.
And they just can't. And they were the team of the South for a long time before there was expansion. Before Atlanta got a team, and you know that was all. You know, the Cardinals were because of KMOX radio
and the West. Correct? Weren't they the furthest?
They were the furthest west before the Western expansion. Yeah, before the Dodgers moved out and the Giants moved out. Yeah. So they were the frontier team and had huge fan base, and so it was and people travel, man. If you were ever in St. Louis for a home Cardinals game, the people who come up from all over in the middle of the summer, the people who come up from anywhere else in the United States, or that, you know, there were traditional Cardinals fans. It's a big deal. It's a gigantic franchise in a relatively small town. You know, small city.
It's no question. The Cubs, though, have put themselves in a great spot to finish this thing off tonight. And, Ro, we were talking earlier about at the break when they were below 500. Let's not forget that. This Cubs team's turned it on since the break. Again, the second-best record in all of baseball since the break. Also, listen to this number here. Since the start of 2015, so under Joe Maddon's manager, since he took over, essentially, the Cubs are 114-55 in August, September, and October regular season games.
Wow.
Best in baseball by far. 114-55. So they know how to close things out, which never was the case, right? It always felt like such a struggle for the Cubs. And now, I know it's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but they're making it look like they are the dominant team, not only in the National League, but in all of baseball. Like, this is what the good teams do.
The curse of 1969. They were winning, going. I mean, I know you kids are too young to remember. Yeah. I'm too young to remember. I've heard all about it, too, my whole life, which is that, you know, it was the Black Cat and the whole deal. And the next thing you know, back then the Black Cat meant it was really a black cat. It wasn't it was like Donald Trump, who's a black cat at his knees? It's not like that.
No,
it's a different deal. They were in the lead, and then they just fell apart in September, and the go-go Mets, and you know, I can't even say the words.
They find ways to win now, where before for decades they found ways to lose.
Right.
It's
so
flips
God
now.
Bless. And then tonight's gonna be a night, because either way they're gonna get through this. They're gonna win, or the Brewers are gonna lose, and that's just the way it's gonna be. All right, Violetta, WGN traffic trouble spots right now. Join the Mr. Fix-It show live from Fox Home Center this Saturday, September 30th, 7 to 10 a.m. Listeners will enjoy a free breakfast, refreshments, live music. Get there early. The first 300 attendees will receive a stocked goodie bag. No need to pre-register. Just come on down. Fox Home Center, Saturday at 7 a.m. It's when it starts. They're at 1150 South Cicero in Alsip. 1150 South Cicero in Alsip, with plenty of parking. Sponsored by Q Premium Natural Quartz from MSI and Shiloh Cabinetry. Go to foxhomecenter.com for details. How about that?
Nice.
It's going to be good right there.
Yes, it will.
Anytime we get to see Lou Manfredini in action, that's him with his tool belt.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got
knows everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine how Lou makes it through a store, because everyone's got questions for him.
He could stuff a breakfast burrito into the tool belt while he's, you know, down there.
He can do everything.
Yes, he's got the whole thing worked out. That's because he's the original Sweet Lou. That's what he is. It's amazing, amazing guy. All right, coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, we're going to meet a great American hero, the Rear Admiral who was once in charge of the Navy SEALs and now part of the Navy SEAL Foundation. Mm-hmm. He's going to tell us about an event going on tomorrow night that is here. We'll also get his thoughts on all the craziness that's happening around the world currently. And we have, and then the fun also ensues right here. Stay right here. here's a true American hero. You know, I could sit around and talk about heroics all day long. I'm roast Ron. which is a great irony, because I, you know, it's... If I get a hangnail, I immediately report to an emergency room.
But not you still make it to work and you power through.
I do.
You've seen that.
I do, because this is my most fun part of the day.
Yes.
But here is a true American hero, Rear Admiral Gary Benelli, who is now the chairman of the Navy SEAL Foundation. 45 years of active and reserve service for the United States Navy and Navy Special Warfare, starting as a frogman in Vietnam and working his way all the way through command of that 9,000-person community of Naval Special Warfare, a lot of it based in North Island in Coronado, California, right off of the coast there of San Diego, which is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful part of the world, mm-hmm. and it's home to so many naval personnel. And it's a very special honor to have you, sir.
Yes, it is.
And just let me get the plug in for what you're in coming into town for tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. There is the Navy SEAL Foundation Chicago Evening of Tribute. Ken Griffin, of course, the very famous hedge fund guy here from Chicago, is the 2017 Navy SEAL Foundation Patriot Award recipient. Mm-hmm. And David Petraeus is the keynote speaker. It takes place at the Field Museum. And if you're interested in attending, NavySEALFoundation.org. I know we're a little late here. It's tomorrow night, but it is a very, very special evening. NavySEALFoundation.org. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
It's a pleasure to be back in the Midwest, especially in Chicago.
Thank you, sir. Let's talk about, there's a couple of different things here. Let's just talk about the Navy SEAL Foundation first, because now you're, you know, after having retired out of service, you're involved in this. Navy SEAL and special warfare folks in all branches of the military have a separate separate set of needs when they come out. That's what we have found, at least so far, in terms of being able to needs with their family, because what their job is when they're actually on active duty is different than a lot of other service personnel. Is that fair to say?
It is, in the sense that everybody contributes. Don't get me wrong. But our guys who are on active duty, on an average year, they're gone 270 days a year. They're either in the fight, training to get in the fight, or training somebody else to get in the fight. So it's a real strain, not only on the individual SEAL warriors, but their families also.
Have we also seen an increase in the use of special operation forces over the years since 9/11? It feels that way, that there's an increase in deployments, but also in the number of special ops.
Absolutely. There's probably 60,000 people across DOD in special operations, and we've been resourced very, very well, but the amount of missions have quadrupled since 9/11.
Wow.
Because you're going in, it's small groups of commandos, essentially, that are going in and doing these special operations at great risk, under fire. I mean, this is where the action really is taking place now. When you started, you were in the Vietnam era, and it used to be the Navy frogmen. You've heard that term. That was a term used in World War II. Underwater demolition teams, UDTs. And then the Navy SEAL program came into effect during and then after the Vietnam era. Well, what kind of changes have you seen in that 45 years span time?
That's a good question. I actually started my career here at Great Lakes. I enlisted as a Navy SEAL in 1968. And what's interesting today, the program's gotten, the selection and training program has gotten elongated to where it takes 2.5 years from when a young man signs up before I can deploy him overseas. And what's interesting, I find interesting, the first 6 months, what people know as basic underwater demolition SEAL training with the infamous Hell Week, mm-hmm. that 6 months of training and selection hasn't changed that much since World War II. Mm-hmm. However, the following 2 years of training changes all the time, depending on what our country wants us to do, and also what the enemy is doing in the battle space.
What makes the determination for the commanders of what's the break point for these guys? What are you looking for in a Navy SEAL?
And it's a very good question. We've spent a lot of tax dollars trying to figure out what makes a Navy SEAL. And we know it's sort of a two-sided coin. On one side of the coin, we know to the 97th percentile of who will not make it through training, who will not make it through training. But when you turn that coin over, we've not been able to figure out what's that special sauce that makes a Navy SEAL. The fact that out of every 100 guys that went in the program, we only get 25 through. That's not a really high return on investment in one sense.
And how long does it take to figure that out? I mean, are these guys going out in that hell week period? I mean, we've now seen, because of so many television shows that are either scripted or reality shows that show what that's like, you know, the guys with that log in the water. I mean, I still can't get it. I have distress just from watching it, let alone going through it. So
it's eye-opening.
Guys who, you know, the men who do that job, that's it, that... Where do you lose them most, or do you lose them after that, and after the 6 months and that two and a half in that other 2 years?
Usually, no. It's very quick because they self-select themselves out of the program. So the hell week usually occurs in the fifth or sixth week. So between the first day of training through hell week is most of the attrition will occur.
And it's a 75% attrition rate.
75% attrition rate, correct.
Gee. Wow.
So, Admiral, I know the organization, the foundation, helps with returning to home life, returning to be for educational opportunities. Describe a little bit of how you help these Navy SEALs when they return and some of the programs you offer.
Absolutely. We have cover about 30 different programs, and we go essentially wherever SEALs are. The important part for your listeners is for every dollar contributed to the Navy SEAL Foundation, the board is all volunteers, so 95 cents of every dollar goes to the guys or their families. Pays for education needs, for special prosthesis, so the military does a great job of, we have a guy gets loses his leg, the military will do a nice job of giving him a prosthesis, but these guys are SEALs. They still want to jump out of airplanes, swim, and compete in marathons. So that's where the foundation will come in. And it's all about resiliency. We have a saying in our military, you know, you recruit the individual, but you retain the family. So to have resilient warriors, you also have resilient warrior families. So we do a lot with the families.
As a guy who came through Great Lakes, as most people, and I think people in the Chicago area, it's amazing to me how little is known about the military bases and the history of the military bases around Chicago by Chicagoans and people from the metropolitan area. But as you pointed out, Naval Station Great Lakes is the place where almost all the recruits in the Navy go through at one point or another. And it's basic training, primary training for these guys. These men and women, and we see them coming around downtown, right, wearing their recruit uniforms, and then you see them immediately, and they disappear. They're here for like 3 hours on a Saturday afternoon, and they're gone. So I would ask you, Admiral, what is your least favorite and favorite memory of Naval Station Great Lakes?
Well, you know, it's good that you brought that up. You know, SEALs at training is spend a lot of time in the water, so you're cold, wet, and miserable. But the coldest time I ever spent in my life was the one night I got liberty here in out of Great Lakes and coming into Chicago. It was probably a March evening, and it was just miserable to be outside.
Yeah,
we remember those. Yeah. Not all 90-degree days at the end of September, right? Yeah.
Now, were you holding a telephone pole at that point too, sir, or was it?
That would have been good.
Yeah, exactly. Brutal. Exactly. All right. Let me just ask you quickly, just as sort of a more general question about where we stand right now.
Sure.
In terms of military readiness, do you have this sense? I mean, I know there's a lot of talk in Washington about military readiness and where the Navy should be. Obviously, the Navy's had two sort of high profile incidents now in the last couple of months in the Pacific Fleet. Do you think that the United States Navy and more generally the DOD is properly prepared here, properly funded? What's your thought on all of that?
Well, the thing that keeps me up at night is not the guys, not the resources. Congress has this thing called continuing resolutions. So it's very difficult for our Navy and our military in general to do long-term budgeting. For a multi-billion dollar corporation to have to deal with budgeting almost on a month-to-month basis, as opposed to being able to look out over a year to five-year window, it's very difficult to figure out the right platforms, the right training, and put the right resources matched to it. And I will tell you that the vast majority of special operations we could not do without having the conventional forces supporting us. And with these continuing resolutions, as our guys are sticking their neck out farther and farther, when they look out there for help from their conventional brothers and sisters, yeah, they may not be there.
Yeah, because they got to get you into the fight, right? Isn't that the issue?
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. It's all about employment.
Right. And the problem is that the Navy SEALs know this, and Marine Recon and all the special warfare warriors, you know, in that tens of thousands community throughout the entire military, is that it's the guys in the Navy, in the Air Force, who in the Marines, who are getting you using their equipment into wherever it is you have to go. I mean, Navy SEAL does have some transport equipment. You've seen those. You've seen those rubber rafts they're on.
Absolutely.
But they have.
And more importantly, not getting us in. Just like you asked us, not only getting us in, but getting us out.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Actually, more importantly,
yeah,
probably,
I guess,
right?
You don't think about it that way unless you're serving.
Yeah, we didn't get there. I have nothing we can do about that, but it is really true. And that is really the important thing, is because these guys have to be able to deploy at a moment's notice. I mean, we've seen now that, and, you know, I'm grateful, you know, as a supporter of these kinds of communities, I'm very grateful that the stories of these guys are being told in such a respectful way now. And now, especially, and I'd love to get your thought on this. I don't know. Have you seen any of the Vietnam series on PBS?
I've watched it every night, and it's just it cuts me to the quick. It's so depressing to watch as a young enlisted SEAL fighting in Vietnam and looking back at it, naturally hindsight's 2020, but the poor decisions our leadership was making and knowingly making and getting people killed making those poor decisions. It's very disheartening.
Yeah.
I need to watch that.
Amazing. Amazing, though, because you get to see it from both sides.
Yeah.
You know, warriors. The one thing that...
And absolutely.
As someone who has been in the fight, that's the... there are no winners. People who've been in battle know there are no winners in war.
Right. By definition, if you go to war, diplomacy's failed. And, right, you know, we just can't have that. I mean, it's very important to have diplomacy. And my bent here is I think what we do compared to business people is special operators in general and SEALs in particular do a very good job of building and sustaining relationships. And you need those relationships so we can go to places and hopefully not have to get into a fight. We can work out things as problem solvers and diplomats, not only as, you know, warriors is always there, but that diplomatic problem solving part of the equation is very, very important to our national defense.
Amen. Admiral, the Navy also made news today with the hospital ship that is heading to Puerto Rico right now, and apparently with water supplies and, you know, an area that is without power and a true humanitarian crisis. So you think about the other role of the Navy right now and those men and women going there to help.
Absolutely. You know, we say we advertise ourselves as a global force for good. I could make the argument the most powerful ships we have in the Navy are our two hospital ships, the Comfort and the Mercy. With those big white ships out there with that big Red Cross on,
yeah,
a lot of times they're a lot more powerful than an aircraft battle group.
Mm. Yeah. I had the great privilege of seeing the Comfort in port, actually, at North Island. When I was there over a decade ago, and when you see that thing,
yeah,
that is, I mean, you know, when you see aircraft carriers, you're like, oh my God, look at the size of that thing.
I know, they're like cities.
But when you see that big hospital ship, you imagine all of the things that those people have seen. That have to see, because, you know, you've got all those helicopter decks and everything on there to be able to receive the wounded, or especially in humanitarian operations. And they have been mercifully and thankfully deployed more on those in recent years.
Yeah.
But it's really something special. Well, all right. Well, Admiral, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you so much. I love your WGN listeners. Thank you for the generosity of all you Midwesterners. I'm told by staff that we'll probably raise up to $4.5 million by the end of tomorrow night, and that's wonderful. Thank you so much, and thank you for supporting the Navy SEAL Foundation at NavySealFoundation.org.
All right.
Thank you,
Admiral,
for your service, too.
It's a great honor to talk to you. Thank you very much, sir. There he goes, chairman of the Navy SEAL Foundation, Rear Admiral, retired Gary Benelli, who once ran the Naval Special Warfare Operations, and is it's a true, when you read his bio, is a true American hero.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow night, if people want to attend or you just want to give money, NavySealFoundation.org. Tomorrow night, David Petraeus is making the speech. Ken Griffin is being honored. It's a black tie at the Field Museum, or a formal event, let's say an evening tribute to the Navy SEAL Foundation and Navy Special Warfare Warriors. And if you would like more information, once again, NavySealFoundation.org.
Tell us, Ro.
I don't know.
What's coming up on the show?
Important stuff. I'm sorry. What, they're saying something in the control room.
Just be cool.
Yeah. Act like you know what's going on.
Yes.
Did you bring your banjo in, too?
I did.
You got your EDM music. Then earlier we heard your guitar.
Yeah. This is not actually a banjo.
I don't know what a banjo sounds like.
I know. Of course you don't. You know what a lute sounds like? Because she's like from Game of Thrones.
I saw someone.
She's sort of like the Mother of Dragons, but in a different sort of way.
That's a total compliment, I think. Yeah.
The call.
Do that role.
Yeah. She's got.
I'm more of a Drago.
She does have dragons. just really. Actually, boyfriend's named Dragon because she's from that part of the world, right?
They have a few of those.
Like, aren't half the guys named Dragon in your part of the world?
Dragon.
Yeah.
Dragon.
Same. What's the difference?
It's different.
Does it mean dragon?
Sure.
All right. Dragon.
There you go. If you say it with Melania Trump's accent,
yeah,
you
Dragon.
Got it.
Dragon. Yes. I think that guy's name was Dragon, the guy, the boom, boom, boom guy.
The Vespa guy that picked her up and dated her for a hot minute and then talked about it.
I think
the boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
The Melania. Yeah. He said nice things about her back in the day, but he knew she was going on to bigger things, he said.
Course,
you remember that?
Yes,
the Vespa guy?
Dragon. I cannot hold her. Dragon. Boom, 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 boom. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let us pause for the cause, and then Judy Pilak will inform us about everything that's happening in the WGN world. But first, Arkadeck of Chicagoland, leader in creating outdoor living spaces for Chicagoland families. They design and build decks, paper patios, screen porches, sunrooms, pergolas, outdoor kitchens, and so much more. They design and built my deck, and it's quite... I'm going out there. You know what? I have a plan tonight, actually, for the deck.
What are you doing?
Did you get an invite, Anna?
Nope.
Oh.
I have a plan tonight.
Judy, you get an invite to the deck?
No one's invited.
Party?
It's just
tonight?
Me.
We
it's,
don't need an invite. We it, just show up.
It's me.
Good point.
In my tight 1970s shorts.
All right,
there.
Maybe we don't want to stop.
And a sleeveless t-shirt.
I got a lot going on.
Because it's warm outside still. And I'm going to use my little outdoor kitchen area. I'm going to use my grill. And I'm gonna make myself a pork chop. Because I want a pork chop.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to have a little salad, but I'm going to make myself, and I'm going to stand out there and the neighbors.
Can you put shoes and shirt on if you're going to be cooking?
I wear black shoes with my red and white 1970s, you know, shorts.
With white
super
tube
tight,
socks.
With white tube socks.
And, get a headband on.
Right. And I do. And I tease my hair. So it's kind of a little bit of a white guy afro.
Mm-hmm. It's very Napoleon Dynamite
looking. Right. It's exactly what it's going to look like. It's going to be very Napoleon Dynamite. And I'm going to stand out there and I'm going to do it. And I'm gonna
don't
you know,
make us call the police.
And then I might slip past. It depends if it gets a little cooler. I might turn on the beautiful fire pit next to it.
It is a great feature.
And then maybe some lights, and maybe play some of the music as I'm you know getting ready. And
your music is it going to be that music, low key?
If this is an image in your head that you would like to replicate in your own home, you need to reach out to my friends at ArchidecOfChicagoland.com, ArchaDeck of Chicagoland.com. They can do this for you too, actually. But it would be a lot classier and nicer than what I just described.
Mm-hmm.
But get ready for next year, or if you do, because there's still plenty of time left this year to enjoy the outdoor spaces in the fall. It's especially beautiful here, right? And then around the holidays, imagine, you know, making the turkey out in your own built-in outdoor grill outside. ArchidecOfChicagoland.com, ArchaDeck of Chicagoland.com. Yep, it's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Our last day of 90 degree heat.
Yeah.
For a while.
Maybe next week.
Happen next 80s. Week too.
Yeah, you never know. 80s, 90s. Thermonuclear war could be 8,900 degrees. Who knows?
Oh, gosh, don't say
that. All right,
that,
let's talk
please.
About... Here, we have to talk about something here that's yeah. very, 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 very important. You know, and Kevin, I need you to join me right here from St. Louis. Cubs are about to take on the Cardinals.
Yes, I'm here
and,
for you.
And you're down there and making sure that they win and that they go into the playoffs. First time, by the way, in 110 years that the Cubs will have made the playoffs 3 years in a row. And back then, they just made the World Series. Right, it was American
Correct.
League nationally.
Yeah, 06, 07, 08.
Of 19, 06,
of 19,
07,
yes.
08.
Yes, I need right? to clarify
it's,
that
it's
part.
When they made, it's when the last time they made
have to go back that far.
The playoffs 3 years, you know, 3 years in a row. Now,
right.
But I want to bring everybody into this because, sure. you know, you got the whole deal here with Anna and her love for the New
Greatest
England Patriots and the GOAT that is Tom Brady. I think
got robbed of an ESPY by some guy in Green Bay.
I think he's more of an ass than a goat, but if I want to go animal to animal there, if
what
I could.
What does ass stand for? A-S-S? What is that?
That's, you know, the jackass, you know, like the animal, the ass. Yeah, donkey. Anyway, the point, I'm just doing my CNC. Right, whatever the CNC taught me to do. All right, here's the deal.
Okay.
I just want to read this story. I want everybody to share in this moment of greatness of the New England Patriot organization and Tom Brady specifically, because I'm blaming him for this as well.
Okay. Sure.
The New England Patriots found themselves in hot water this Sunday after fans complained that they were asked to pay $4.50 for tap water at Gillette Stadium.
What?
Temperatures were at 86 degrees, right? It was, you know, hot everywhere. It was the highest high temperature. It broke the record by 5 degrees for Lambeau Field for a game.
Wow.
I think about that as the end of September, right? I mean, that's pretty
Heat.
Crazy.
Serious heat.
Yeah. Because it generally gets cold around, you know, it can get cold at night up there at this time of year, right? So temperatures hit 86 degrees in Foxborough.
Yep.
So they had prepared. They doubled their inventory of bottled water. However, the demand far exceeded what they were able to hold in their concession stands. And it was almost four times what they had actually prepared for that they would have for an average game. So, as concession stands ran out of water, the bottles of water, fans asked for cups of tap water instead.
Yep.
So what did the concession stands at Gillette Stadium, Robert Kraft, billionaire, Tom Brady, maker of water and pills that make your
help people
your
in pajamas
way.
And pajamas that cool
lives.
You and heat you and revive you and make your things do things that wouldn't
fend
normally
off
do
health issues
cost $100.
They charge for cups of drinking water, tap water, $4.50.
What?
Personally,
boycott.
I think it'd be an honor, a deep personal honor to drink the same tap water as Tom Brady. Personally.
He has stocks of
for
his
any
own
price.
Personal TB12
water. I think
$4.50
is cheap. And I bet that because Tom Brady is affiliated with it would somehow be better for you.
I wouldn't care if he was feeding the water to me. That's crazy.
$4.50 for tap water.
It does seem a little high.
Boycott the Patriots. Let's start it now.
And I'm picturing it in like those little styrofoam cups that's like nothing.
Right. They're never good. There's like two ice cubes in it that take off like 50% of the cup.
Oh, ice was probably a dollar extra.
Is that one of those deals where they do like the, well, we have to pay for the cup? You know how you get that response sometimes when you just ask for like, when you go to sometimes stadiums and other venues, concert
restaurants
venues,
will do
restaurants
that too.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
That's how they get you.
Well, they also know that people are just dumping liquor into their cups anyway when they're asking for a cup. Like when Violetta goes up to at a festival or something and she's got, can I just get a cup of ice, please? For free, you know,
and
she's
a couple straws,
and she's dumping the vodka that she has ensconced somewhere in a balloon inside of her. You know, like
she's got a handle,
right? She's got something like that's tucked in like under her arm, and it's like it's like some sort of a water thing deal.
A jug,
water bag, a Buddha bag. What do they call those? Bodie bags. That, you know, like she's got that, and it's just filled with vodka. They know that. But you see, when it's 86 degrees at Gillette Stadium, and people are watching the greatest of all times.
That's true. The GOAT.
I mean, are you telling me honestly and sincerely that you got to charge people $4.50 when they could be dying out there?
Think about this. It's kind of double the bang for the buck because, as Tom Brady has told us in his book, that's sunscreen. Remember?
All right.
Drink half your body's water and weight in water every day.
Imagine how much water you'd have to
sunscreen.
Do for that.
That's ridiculous. Nobody drinks that much water. You'd probably die if you drank that much water.
No, but it'd be like $120 probably at this $4.50 price.
All right, wait. Half your body in ounces.
In ounces.
In ounces.
Oh,
so
ounces.
Sorry, half your body weight in ounces.
So he says he drinks 111 ounces a day. So whatever your body weight is.
So 111 ounces. So he's 222.
Mm-hmm.
So how many ounces would 100 ounces of water be? Like, how many bottles of water are we looking at?
It's like 8 ounces for a cup. So
yeah,
standard state. I don't know if that's standard stadium.
Okay, so basically what he's providing is nothing groundbreaking.
Think of it as like cans, like 12 ounce cans, right?
Okay.
So let's just do 10 of those.
Sense.
Let's just call it 10 of those. 9 of those.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call it 9 of those.
Nine LaCroix.
Yeah, that's what you got.
The Miller Lights count?
It has water in it.
It does have water. It has a lot more water in it than it does anything else, actually. So that works out.
All right. Then I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm right on par with Brady's consumption.
It's a 12-pack. It's like drinking a 12-pack of water.
Do you ever get sunburned, Kevin? Because that's supposed to help
you. I get sunburned, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's not working.
No, the alcohol doesn't help with that. And it also makes you automatically sunburned even in the middle of winter.
Right. It just makes your face red.
Reddy, ruddish, kind of reddish thing that goes on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What's wrong with Kevin? And what's wrong with Ted Kennedy's nose? It's just it explodes at the end because you've been drinking so much. Too soon, damn it. Too soon.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. Hey, are you proud of Tom Brady now? Who's like selling you pellets to put in the water that are going to make you so much? He would have sold them water for $4.50, and then for $10, you get a pellet that gives you an electrolyte that makes your pinky hard or something. I don't know. Whatever it does.
I blame Belichick. I blame Belichick for this.
Belichick.
Belichick.
Belichick is how you pronounce that name.
Well, he's the billionaire, and he...
Watergate all over again.
Yeah, Watergate. Exactly. Thank you, Violetta.
Yeah, this
for
is actual
this
Watergate. Yeah,
it actually is Watergate.
Well, wasn't everyone
see how,
kind of
see how it goes around? It just came around, finally.
Right, now it makes sense.
You live long enough. Almost anything can happen. All right. Well, there you go.
They've got to be getting so much heat. I wonder if they'll reimburse fans for that.
Speaking of reimbursing, did you see DirecTV is reimbursing fans who are canceling their Sunday ticket plans because of players kneeling?
I know the best way to get rid of that, actually. They have an online chat room. If you go to that, they basically give you anything you want. I don't know if it's a robot giving it to you, but...
At DirecTV?
Yeah. I got so many discounts just by emailing these people.
Really?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Okay, good to know.
Check it out.
Pro tip.
I want to know what happened to my shortcuts. Why don't I have my shortcuts on my DirecTV now for the Sunday package?
Mm-hmm.
You get where they condense the every game of the week into 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. You don't get that?
Zone?
And it's not Red Zone. It's called Shortcuts. It comes on Sunday night. It runs Sunday through Tuesday. And then you get to see every game on the 700 channels.
We had that. We were watching that on Sunday.
And I don't know why. And I ordered it. I have it. I paid the $25 extra or whatever for it that they charge you now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. I got to tell you something. I have DirecTV only because I want the Sunday ticket. I have DirecTV and Comcast.
Oh my gosh.
And Xfinity or whatever it's called. You know how much I pay more for my cable bill than I do for a car. I swear to God, it's insane.
With that plan,
yeah.
It's
the stupidest thing ever. But I am covered.
You don't miss a thing.
No,
worth it.
Yeah,
I had Sunday ticket
just me watching the TV
because of a promotion, and then it ended, and then I get charged for it, and I'm like, can I get like HBO or Stars or something, anything other than this? And the guy on the phone's like, no, this is really, really a great package. I'm like, I don't watch football. I don't need this.
So. Oh, then it's not good for you. You know what I'm loving though about the Sunday ticket right now?
Hmm.
Is I get to watch Jay Cutler.
Oh, well, yeah, right. You just want to check in on those games.
I have to do it. And I was watching on Sunday. I was like, I was watching him doing the exact same thing at MetLife Stadium right against the Jets, the hapless New York Jets, who may be the only team worse than the Bears. And here is Jay Cutler missing his receivers and then putting his hands on his hips and having that same pouty look on his face with everything.
Oh, I know.
It made me feel so much better.
It did. It made you feel a little bit better. I mean, you just kind of wanted to see that right after you saw the Cooper play. You wanted to go over and see Jay Cutler throw an interception just as a reminder.
Exactly. It could have been like this. Instead, we got Hodor throwing interceptions. It's better.
Somehow it is.
He does. He moves like Frankenstein in the movies, you know, like in the like mm-hmm. in the 1933 version or whatever year that was. Right? I mean, he's thinking, with his arms out. Oh, my fire!
You know, Frankenstein was known as a pocket passer.
Yes, he was. He had to be in the pocket.
Strong arm, though.
He did. When he threw the little girl in the well, he was in the pocket. I mean, God forbid any of the defensive linemen have a Bic lighter and they show it to him. It's going to be right.
What did OB say about him again? Obradovich?
He has no arms and no legs.
No arms and no legs quarterback.
Right.
And no backbone.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'll get a water for $4.50.
Still disgusted by that. Oh, and then before we go, we got to read George Clooney's poem.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, he penned one. He's in to support the protesters.
He must be really bored raising those twins.
Or just really tired.
Right now he's got to get out of the room.
Sleep induced.
Because the kids can't stop crying. Like he's anywhere near that, by the way. Are you kidding me?
He's like, I got to go write a poem. What's going on in the country?
Yeah, right. I mean, that sounds like an excuse.
It do you totally have it does. In front of you?
I have it here. It's very short, and it doesn't rhyme. So okay. It's one of all those right. That you just sort of go with it.
Okay, here we go.
I read it nice and like a poem.
How would George Clooney read it? I don't know. I'm not going to try. I pray for my country. I pray that we can find more that unites us than divides us. I pray that our nation's leaders want to do the same. I pray that young children like Tamir Rice can feel safe in their own neighborhood. I pray for all of our children, including his twins, screaming in the next room. I pray for
that was not in the
he
poem.
Didn't say that because that wouldn't work. I pray for our police and our first responders. I pray for our men and women of the armed services. I pray that dissent will always be protected. Why do you have that weird echo thing going on?
This is poem
because it's a poem.
Yeah, but it doesn't really fit. If you hear, I pray for dissent will always be protected in this great country. I pray for a more perfect union. And when I pray, I kneel.
Wow. The
is
best
it over
part.
Yet?
That's the best part was the last part.
Speaking of all this, I've got to go, guys, because I have to stand for the anthem right now. They're about to sing it at Bush Stadium.
Oh, yeah, you better do that. Yeah, goodbye. That's a good point.
Don't be the next controversy.
Nice transition.
Really? Did you see Kevin Powell didn't make it?
Chicago sports reporter Kevin Powell refuses to stand for national anthem.
Here's a picture of him in the wrong spot.
And then where he's and where he's going, but I was listening to George Clooney's prayer. I couldn't go anywhere.
So that's out there. That's what George Clooney's doing these days.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't disagree with his.
No,
I don't. I actually don't disagree
spirit.
With what he said. That's. I like that spirit of that. Mm-hmm. You know. I mean, dissent is important in the United States. It's not always right. Dissent is not always right. But that's what makes us different from North Korea.
Sure.
And everywhere, pretty much everywhere else. And it does create a more perfect union. Mm-hmm. And so
here in the hallways of the Great Tribune, we see those words every day. We pass by them. I may not agree with the thing you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say them. And it's true. That's one of the beautiful things about this country.
Violetta Podramatic.
Another great thing about this country.
Yeah, another beautiful thing about this country. She was just about to say it herself, so we might as well say it.
Might as well.
I'm a beautiful thing about this country, too,
and
you know.
And another thing that's beautiful.
Even though I was born on an inner tube in the Rio Grande River.
That was my sister.
Oh, whatever. On a tractor tire.
We were already established Americans when I was born.
You mean you're across the border, is what you're saying.
Is it dry foot rules from Serbia, too?
Yes, it's a dry foot rule. All right, don't you have the traffic? DLJKGN after this.
Listen, learn, laugh. 720 WGN.
All right, JK with the DL here. Justin Kaufman, what you got?
Hey, Justin.
All right,
Happy
feeling
Tuesday.
Good. Happy Tuesday. Good to see you.
No, thank you. Yeah.
I hadn't had a chance to talk to you, Ro, but my son came up with a great idea for you.
Yeah.
My 10-year-old son said, you know, tell Ro he should do a segment called Pro vs. Con, where you take professionals, and his example was a professional swimmer.
Okay.
International professional swimmer.
Mm-hmm. Like Lochte.
Yeah. International, yeah. I'm not sure where he got
Lochte.
That. Yeah. Right, Lochte style.
Right.
and this would be you'd swim against them.
And I smoke bones with them.
Yeah,
that's
before and after.
But
the idea that you take someone who does what they do professionally, sure, like an athlete or something, mm-hmm, like that, and you have to like race them. It's pro versus con.
Do they both pee,
like the
Schmee
versus
pool?
The shark?
Do they both pee in the pool like Ryan Lochte says that he does?
I could do that. I could pee in the pool with him.
I think it's a good idea. I got to say, I feel like
your son is when he's bright.
When he said it to me, I said, first, you should be working for me, not Roe. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing.
Great
I said.
Point.
Secondly, mm-hmm, I said,
"No, tell me. Trust me. He's got the right guy here.
he needs a horse.
I understand. I understand what he's doing.
The right horse in life.
Maybe instead of sports, though, you guys do like intellectual stuff.
Yeah, true. We could do that. But pro versus con could work.
Hey,
for
listen. I would like.
Too.
You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to flush out of the pocket with my Glennon. I'd like to see who can move faster as they're moving left to right for 10 yards." And then, throw the ball. My money's on me too.
Hands down,
right?
Yeah. Now I don't think I'm going to be able to get my arm across my chest as well as he's going to be able to do and get the ball as far. But I'll tell you, for if you want me to run to my right and throw a 15-yard pass, I can do it.
Right. Well, we'll have to find out in the first episode of Pro V Con.
Perfect.
Let's try that. You know what? Mike Lennon, I challenge you.
Pro versus Con. And then I said to him, I said, well, you have to be prepared that the brilliant mind that is Ro Khan has already come up with this idea. Since it's pretty I said to him, I go, it's low-hanging fruit. I mean, if he hasn't, he's an idiot. This was over our dinner. I'm like, Ro, see, the problem is Ro's a smart guy. If he didn't come up with this, he's lousy. And so to find out now that you haven't come up with this in your illustrious, legendary
Hall of Fame. Your kid's a genius.
Yes, that is something genius.
Keep him away from broadcasting. That's, you know, send him to, you know, like cure cancer or something.
Yes.
For years and years, I worked with the great Don Wade, the late, great Don Wade.
Yeah, of course.
And so Don and Roma would do mornings and I would do the afternoons. And and every boss that would come in that was from out of town, you know what we need to do? Mm-hmm. Honey, Bobby, baby, darling, sweetheart, listen. We should do a Roe versus Wade segment.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, right.
Everybody wanted to do that.
They went in that direction. He's not at the Roe v. Wade stage of his life yet.
Trust me. It was a bad idea then. It was a bad... And then, actually, so we tried it once. And Don and I looked at each other like, what are we doing?
What is
the point of this? And it was always... because the guys love the idea of the title more than they love the idea of the execution of
like
what it
how
was.
How do you flesh this out?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out Justin's son, 10 years old, did you
10
say?
10 years old,
is smarter than all of the programming people.
I love it's a Roe v. Wade segment, which I get. It's great. Yeah. But I'm sure there were no women involved with the making of that segment, right?
Listen, there were no women involved in the Roe v. Wade period thing anyway. Right? I mean, it's like, no one, if you ask women about it, they would be like, well, I don't know.
Yes, but he's got a pro v con, so maybe we'll work on it.
Look, the brainstorming now just fostered something else.
What?
Bad ideas in broadcasting.
Oh, God.
My gosh. Let's
begin with Roe v. Wade.
Roe v. Wade. I think number two was the announcerless football game at NBC.
Yeah, all right.
Oh, yeah, that was beautiful.
The TV series Super Train, which was a ripoff of The Love Boat on a train, and they didn't realize that the train is too narrow to actually get all the people in the same shot.
This has been your Bad Ideas in Broadcasting Minute.
Oh, gosh. That's
a whole series.
That could really go on for a long time.
A fall-winter series.
I have 100 of them for my career, and I'm involved in 75 of them.
That's great.
All right, take it away. I'm sure it's good.
It's great.